Friday on Turkey Day. The ceasefire between Israel and Palestinian militants in Gaza has taken hold, NBC's Martin Fletcher.
The streets of Tel Aviv are pretty empty, and there's no sense among the people that there's anything to celebrate.
It's very difficult to trust a terrorist organization like Hamas.
Although the government and the military are saying that they did succeed in their war aims to cripple the ability of Hamas and other Islamic militant organizations like Islamic Jihad to terrorize Israel with their rockets.
This is NBC News Radio. A procession of Shiite Muslims has been shattered by a suicide bomber near Pakistan's capital. Nearly two dozen people were killed, including eight children. The nation's drought has taken a turn for the worse, with 60% of the continental U.S. in some form of drought. That figure is up from 58.8% just over a week ago. A former Price is Right model has been awarded more than $7.7 million in punitive damages after a jury decided the show discriminated against her because she was pregnant. Brandi Cochran was also awarded nearly $777,000 in actual damages. And those days of guessing what may be the right size when ordering clothing online could be a thing of the past, as NBC News Radio Paul Harlan reports.
British researchers have come up with a new scanning device that calculates and displays accurate measurements. While it's an advance, there are still plenty of people who won't want to substitute that for actually trying garments on for size.
I'm Barbara Cusack, NBC News Radio.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
This Friday after Thanksgiving at Ace.
The weekend is coming!
Take back Black Friday with a slow cooker on sale for $7.99 plus a $5 mail-in rebate.
The weekend is coming!
So visit your local Ace and get saving, then get your weekend back. At Ace, the helpful place. $11.99 value, limit one rebate per person, only valid Friday, November 23rd. Additional conditions may apply.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
See store for details.
You want to give one special gift. It shows that you love what they do. It gives them cheer all through the year. You always hear, thank you.
Give a, give a, give a, give a garment.
Who's the Grinch that stole Thanksgiving?
Is it the retailers who are doing that, or is it the consumers by going out and actually shopping?
Market Watch columnist Jennifer Waters reports lots of shoppers say Thanksgiving night is too early to start holiday sales. But the stores say,
we're just conceding to customer demand.
And there are hints that might be true in our non-brick-and-mortar shopping habits.
And that's what a lot of them will say, is that, you know, we looked at online shopping on Thanksgiving Day. It's pretty strong, and in fact, in some cases, it's stronger than it is on the so-called Cyber Monday. But there's a difference between sitting around watching TV with the family and shopping online than there is to getting out there and actually doing it.
Analysts say another reason for holiday hours is fear of being outdone by a competitor.
You know, retail is like a herd mentality. You know, when one does it and everybody sees how that works, and then they all might follow the herd and do it too.
Read more in Jennifer Waters' Consumer Confidential column at MarketWatch.com. I'm Adrienne Mitchell from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Mom, I can't do my math homework. I just don't get it. I'm no good at math. I hate math.
I've always considered myself a good mother, but when it came to my son Billy's math, I was at a loss. It wasn't that he didn't try, but he kept falling further behind and losing confidence. Then a friend told me about Math Made Easy DVDs. You can order any subject from arithmetic to fractions, percents, algebra, even calculus. Concepts are simplified in an entertaining way, so students enjoy learning at their own pace, in the convenience of home. It's as easy as watching TV. Best of all, it's affordable for everyone. Listen, end the frustration. Call Math Made Easy. Call now for a 30-day risk-free trial. 866-568-MATH. Now that school is in full swing, it's important for your child to keep up with the fast-moving classroom pace. With Math Made Easy, your child will always be prepared and one step ahead. Call now, 866-568-MATH. That's 866-568-6284.
If you have readers on your holiday gift list, here's great news from Barnes & Noble. This Friday, get the best price ever on Nook Simple Touch. It's just $59. You save $40. Gizmodo called Nook Simple Touch, quote, the best e-reader. And this Friday, you can get it for our best price, too. Only $59 while supplies last. Only at your neighborhood Barnes & Noble. Only Black Friday.
Honey, why is there a turkey in the car?
Oh, turkey's ready.
Turkey.
Yeah, we've got shopping to do. See ya.
This is no ordinary Thanksgiving. Sears Black Friday starts 8 p.m. Thursday with over 1,000 incredible doorbusters throughout the store. Find great gifts from the top brands for everyone on your list. And we're open all night with even more unbelievable doorbusters starting 4 a.m. Friday. This is how to gift. This is Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details.
The comments, ideas, and opinions expressed in the following program are those of the show participants only. Nothing stated in this program reflects the ideas, opinions, or beliefs of this radio station and or Clear Channel Radio.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano will return live to 1310 a.m. this Monday. We now present some of our favorite moments from past shows. Happy holidays and enjoy.
I've been looking forward to this next segment since I first got the press release yesterday. I want to read something to you that quoting my next guest before I introduce him and bring him on. It says, the idea of losing freedoms always starts small and grows with each loss of liberty because of apathy. At a time when our military are on the ground fighting for our freedom, we can't lose them for fear of offending someone. That is a powerful statement. Who said it? Well, my next guest. Joining us now is Steve Griffin. Steve is the president and CEO of Veritas Entertainment. He is an amazing innovator in anything technology. He understands marketing in ways you and I never will. In fact, he's probably forgotten more about the way to touch people than most of us will ever know. He has dedicated much of his life to family, faith, and God, and the way that we serve our fellow man. And I'm sure that there will be a lot of things that Steve and I would not agree on. But one of them is our constitutional right, not only to free speech, but to practice whatever religion we encompass in our lives. And Steve Griffin, I can't thank you enough for joining us this morning.
Well, I am honored to be on your show this morning. Thanks for having me.
Listen, this could be a very different conversation. There doesn't have to be anything partisan about what we're going to talk about. And we're actually going to talk, you've got a new movie out that we want to get to as well, which we will a little bit later on. And it's called Last Ounce of Courage, and we'll get to that in Steve, I promise, in just a few minutes. But over the last couple of weeks, again, religion comes into the forefront of the political dialogue. I happen to live in a part of Southeast Michigan, and I'm literally where I live, that has a very high concentration of Muslim Americans. And I mean a high concentration. These are people that are friends. These are, the moms and dads of my kids' friends. These are people that I break bread with. These are my neighbors. These are not people I see any differently than I see anybody else. I think that actually, unfortunately, makes me unique.
Well, I think it does give you a perspective that hopefully will give us an interesting dialogue today, because as we talk about the statement that you attributed to me, which is a true statement, is what I feel personally for our country, we have to defend freedom at any cost. And that's why I wrote the op-ed, as it kind of sprung out of the movie, which we'll talk about. But the position of Christian Americans, and I hate tags, but I'm going to use that tag to make the point. Christianity is an inclusive religion. It's a religion that, if Muslims want to pray to Allah, if Jewish faith wants to blow their shofar, that's what we are granted under the constitutional rights of this country, and that's what makes America great. And when we start going down a slippery slope that says you can't do that and you can't pray here and you can't do that, it affects everyone. And so I think that we have brave men and women who are in harm's way, and we can argue whether that's good or bad, but they're there. They are fighting for our liberties as Americans, and they come home, and many of them come home and they don't make it back alive. But the ones that come home alive, they look at our nation, and they see apathy. They see people sitting on their hands, And they said, why are we fighting? What are we trying to defend? Well, I think they're trying to defend the freedoms that we take for granted here in this nation. And this is not a Democrat or a Republic, a conservative or a liberal. This is about freedom. And I think freedom is something that we overlook because we've got bigger issues like the budget to deal with, or we've got this political race to deal with. But what undergirds this great nation, in my opinion, is freedom. And that's freedom for your neighbors that you break bread with, and that's freedom down here in the South for the people that want to go to church and still want to pray in schools.
And I don't disagree with any of that. You know, listen, I am a left-leaning liberal Democrat, but without my faith, Steve Griffin, I grew up in a household that the Italian American household that was shocker, a traditional Catholic. When I was about 10 years old, my mother became an evangelical born-again Christian, turned our family upside down. But the infusion of those two different faiths in that household and the way that we found a way as a family to deal with that, to grow from that, did one profound thing for my family. It gave us a foundation for faith. I don't need to define it any more than that because you know what I mean, Steve.
I know exactly what you mean. And it's interesting. And I was reading recently because I'm really upset about all the things that are happening in the Middle East. I'm upset about what's happening in our nation. And you know, our founding fathers, they had to make a decision way back when they started this great nation. Is it going to be either have a foundation of theism or anti-theistic foundation? And they chose theism. And as you know, in 1892, the Supreme Court went through this exhaustive deliberation, and they said this: our laws and institutions must necessarily be based and embody the teachings of the Redeemer of mankind. It's impossible otherwise, and in this sense, to this extent, our civilization and our institutions are emphatically Christian. I don't think there's anything wrong with the moral principle supported by what the founding fathers based this nation on. Now, we can go, as you said, there's different ways to interpret that, but there should be a dialogue that's a sensible dialogue as we converse about these topics and not get all riled up. And that's what we're trying to say in our movie. You know, when the founding fathers put a cross, that was their symbol of religion, on the shores of the Atlantic, it said, we will worship as we see fit, or not worship at all. And that's okay. I mean, it's okay not to worship at all. And to pigeonhole someone in to say, you have to do it this way. I take exception when our government now decides through the courts that we are going to take God out of this nation. Because here's my position. We have to be a nation of character. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, Steve. Absolutely.
And so that's universal. Again, this is not a political issue to me. This is a freedom issue. And then I ask the question, Tony, What's your character based on? It has to be based on something unchangeable, unmutable. It can't vary. That's what happens in America today. We're going to base our character on a changing perspective. Well, then you never have real character. And so I think, you know, we make films of courage, character, and conviction because we want to move the needle towards character. I want our kids in the next generation not to be arguing about politics. I'd like them arguing about freedom and character. And so that's the kind of movies that we want to make. And that's the kind of nation that I would hope that we have. And it just cuts through politics. We can argue about different things, and you're right. We're probably diametrically opposed. But when it comes to freedom, we have to be united, or we'll lose it little by little, and it will start small. And we'll sit on the couch with our big screen TVs, happy to be alive in this country, and we'll look up one day and we'll say, what's happened to our nation? Where did the freedom go?
Well, and the problem, Steve, with that is there will be a lot of people that are willing to say it and a whole lot more that will be willing to do nothing about it. Before we've got a few minutes to the break, but before we get to the break, and I'm hoping you can stay with us after the break as well, let's talk a little bit about the last ounce of courage, because it does tell a story that's terribly relevant to what's happening today.
It does. And I think, you know, it's a movie of the small town mayor, and he served in Vietnam, because that's our duty as Americans. When they're called to serve, they serve, and they defend this great nation. And then his son goes off to war, and in the first 8 minutes of the movie, he's killed. And he leaves behind a wife and an unborn child. And then we fast forward through the magic of movies, 14 years, and the wife and the 14-year-old son come back to this small town in the Midwest where now the man's the part-time mayor and the pharmacist. And the question that was the seminal question that just still gets me today, and this script was written 4 years ago, so it is not a political message. He says, the grandson says to the grandfather, Tony, what did my dad die for, Bob? And Bob says, that's what happens in war, kid. He says, no, why did he die? And I think that's a question we ask as Americans. These kids put themselves in harm's way. What do they die for? Well, he decides that he's going to put Christ back in Christmas because he's told he can't. It's a federal holiday. It's a legal holiday. And yet we're being pushed and pushed and pushed. And I'm 58 years old, and we had Christmas trees on the courthouse lawn, and I didn't see that we were a bad society back 50 years ago. But something's happened in America that we can't even have a Christmas tree. We can't have the kind of things that we practiced. And my Jewish friends say, hey, we had Christmas trees when I was a kid. It didn't bother us. We still worshiped God, and we still had Hanukkah, but we can't do that any longer. So he put his head out of the foxhole as the mayor, and as you know, when you take your head out of the foxhole today, bad things happen, regardless of party affiliation. And so, in a typical movie fashion, you know, he is told he can't do that. It's against the Constitution. He said, show me that. He says, well, it's against the law. He said, show me that. And then, you know, you get bullied around, and the tree's torn down. But what happened is he makes a speech from the roof, Tony. He says, this is not about red and green lights. It's about the freedom to do it. And that's what transforms this movie. It's not a Christmas movie. Yeah, the tree got torn down. Yeah, we should be able to have a tree if you believe like that. But he says, it's about the freedom to do it. And when we lose that freedom, we lose something very powerful. And so it's the closest thing that I've ever seen. This is a movie to It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart. This movie honors our military. It honors those brave men and women and says, you did not make that sacrifice. We are going to stand up, and we're going to defend those freedoms here in the United States of America just as you do overseas. And with now diplomats being killed over religious intolerance, it's a staggering thing to me that we just can't take that anymore. We've got to unite as Americans and say enough's enough. We're not going to go out and kill people because we disagree with them. We're going to have a dialogue with them. That's what makes America great.
It is what makes America great. Let me just let people know the website, if you want more information on the movie, is lastouncethemovie.com. It's a beautiful website. Great trailers, great testimonials. I really want to encourage you all to go check it out. Steve Griffin, if you can, we need to take a break. I hope you can stay with us a bit longer.
I'll stay with you, Tony.
I appreciate that. We're going to take a very, very quick break here. LastOunceTheMovie.com. You want to go check it out. Religious freedom. Religious freedom. Freedom. Period. A lot more to get to. Stay with.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Trupiano, or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310WDTW.com today.
Hi, Tony Trupiano here. One of my pet projects for 2012 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org. That's www.thetonyshow.org and click on the register to vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's free as well. So if you have yet to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says register to vote right here. We all care about our democracy, but if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are, without voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we have all had enough of that. Again, go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the register to vote button now and register.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive?
Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Oh, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
Feeling you were just born for greatness.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW, Dearborn, Detroit. Listen 24 hours a day on iHeartRadio.
What Veritas Entertainment's all about.
Sure, we're an entertainment company, and that means you make movies and you look at TV projects. We have a music label, publishing, and really we originally looked at the moniker of Faith, Family, and Freedom, which the first movie, Last Dance, embodies those elements. But I felt that was a little restricting and could send the wrong signal to different audiences. So really, I changed it, and what we're really trying to make is movies and entertainment around courage, character, and conviction. And that gives us a wide palette to make movies. As an example, I would argue that every movie ever made is a story of character. From Kill Bill to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo to Gone with the Wind, you name a movie, and it talks about the character traits of the hero or the villain and the sub, you know, actors in the movie. And generally, you have character resolution by the end of the movie. And so by telling stories about character, we just want to move the needle. We believe in God. We believe in family. We believe in the freedoms that our militaries are fighting for. But we just want entertainment products that will speak to the country and not to one specific group. I will be very specific about that. We want an entertainment company that's inclusionary versus exclusionary based on, well, you don't believe like I do, so therefore, comma, you're not going to like this. And I'm going to liken that back a little bit to, you know, some people attack us already. Before the movie ever came out, you know, the Los Angeles Times called people that liked the movie The Last Ounce of Courage thin-skinned, conspiracy-minded Christians. Well, I hope your audience can hear by my tone of voice and the way I'm communicating today, that's not my heart. And so, you know, to be attacked when you're a little company by a big paper like the LA Times always is hurtful. And, you know, I don't know why we have to have that dialogue of venomous stuff coming on, but we do. And but we want to be a company that's based on principles and values that are unchangeable. We believe that's a God-based company. And so that's the kind of entertainment we want to put out. You don't need gratuitous violence. You don't need naked body parts. You don't need to be spewing bad language to tell a good story. And that's the kind of movies we're going to make. Not everyone will like that kind of movie, but we have to be consistent to what we believe as people and consistent to the message we get out. That's what Veritas Entertainment does.
Well, I think that's a beautiful concept, and I hope you find wild success. You know, Steve, as we were talking in the last segment, In 2006, I ran for Congress, and I was at a town hall meeting talking to a group of people, and there was a large contingent of young military men and women in the audience. And one of the audience members got up, and as you know, it was very popular to bash President Bush during the war, and so there was a lot of that going on. One of the young men in the audience, who was by all measure a fairly liberal Democrat serving in the Marines, was asked, "How can you have the political views you have and still serve this commander in chief?" He stood up and said, "Ma'am, with all due respect, I'm fighting for not just your freedom, but mine as well. And I can tell you, after being in the foxhole, there isn't a bullet made that's partisan."
Well, and that's true. And, you know, and while I don't agree with the views of our current president on many things, he's still the commander-in-chief, and he still is trying to plot the future for this country safely. And so we have to respect the views of our leaders, whether it's Bush, whether it's Obama, whether we agree or disagree. You're right. Bullet doesn't have Republican or Democrat. It's not partisan. We're fighting for freedom here. It's a big issue. And so I think this election is about freedom. You know, we can argue all the different things and all the politicians argue about, but at the lowest level, when you ran for office and when people run at the state and the national office, I just ask, my litmus test is simple. Who is the candidate that's going to stand up for the values to keep God in this country, to protect the family, which I believe the family unit made America great at all aspects of this country, and who's going to be the defenders of freedom so that we have these liberties still at home? And if I can go off on my checklist, and whoever that candidate is, that's who I'm going to vote for, period, end of discussion. Because way Washington, D.C. is right now with all the arguing going back and forth, I want a leader at any level that will defend my freedoms as an American citizen.
Well, I do know, and I think as a country, and I don't mean to overgeneralize, so if it sounds like I am, let me apologize to the audience in advance, because I don't mean to do that. But I do think that we do take freedom for granted. And, you know, there literally, Steve, literally, there isn't a single person listening to this program right now, not a single one, that hasn't somehow been touched by a war. I don't care which war it is. There literally isn't a single person listening to us that isn't freer today because somebody connected to them sacrificed to make sure that we had the right that was constitutionally granted to us and the courage to step up at a time when we needed somebody to defend those very rights. We need to be a little more grateful in this country.
I think we do, and I think that, you know, we had the people that like our movie, The Last Ounce of Courage, which should really just capture the things that you and I have talked about this morning. It's our senior citizens, and they can be, you know, we call them in the South Yellow Dog Democrats or Republicans, but they come into the theater, and they are in tears, and they're coming up afterwards saying, this is the best movie I've ever seen. Now, I'm not sure that's the case, but the reason it is, if you think about it, they're the ones, they're the generation in their 80s now that have watched the freedoms that we take for granted disappear in their lifetime. This country has changed in their lifetime.
Well, it has. You know, we oddly, and you wouldn't know this, in the last half hour, we talked with the executive director at the American Alliance for Retired People. And, you know, that was the theme of earlier in the hour. This is a different country. We do look at things differently. And I think the stories, I believe the stories that Veritas Entertainment is trying to tell, and certainly, and I have not yet seen Last Downs of Courage. I do plan to do that, but I do believe that sometimes that simple foundational message, the one that really is a reminder of where we come from. You know, Steve, as well as I do, because we learned this in college and we learned it in high school. I don't even know if they teach this anymore. There's this old cliche in history that there's a future in history. You remember hearing it. I remember hearing it. I don't know that it's uttered any longer, but folks, if we forget our past, we are so destined to repeat the mistakes of that past. I can't admonish this audience enough that this idea of courage, character, and freedom, this theme, is so critically important to everything we do, regardless of your political point of view.
Well, I think it is, I know it is, and I am passionate about it. And I think you're seeing more Americans across party lines, because we're in this crazy election. People are saying, we need to stand up for these freedoms. You know, when I go to church, I sit alongside Republicans and Democrats and Independents. I sit alongside people of color. And guess what? We all worship the same God. And so as we do that, there's a common ground there. Not to get spiritual and religious on you, but in the Bible, Jesus talks about nudging people gently towards the truth. And that's what we need to be doing. When you nudge people gently and talk about things that are true, it's a lot easier to have a dialogue versus beating them over the head with a Bible.
Well, maybe that's where I'm making my mistake. Steve Griffin, I want to thank you so much for being with us again. The website is lastouncethemovie.com. Thank you so much for this dialogue this morning. Blessings to you, and I appreciate your time.
Right back at you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Steve Griffin, once again.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week. A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
The odds of this Alaskan-born pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy. You feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Very googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contests.
You ever have that feeling? You were just born for greatness.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
feed pouring,
drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for, and much more. All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5020.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan.
Your future is waiting
for you now.
Ew, it stinks in here.
Passing gas. Is there a right time and a wrong time to do it?
Come on, huh? I'm trying to eat.
When indoors in the company of others, passing gas is not only taboo, it can be deadly.
I'm gagging.
Passing gas releases a plume of toxic vapors like ammonia and hydrogen cyanide.
Oh, you're killing us over here.
Every year, hundreds of infants exposed to passed gas die.
What? I cracked a window?
And just opening a window isn't enough. These deadly fumes can linger in the room for hours after odors have dissipated.
Daddy, you promised you'd smoke outside.
You're right, Pumpkin. Excuse me.
If you smoke, take it outside. Don't pass gas. A message from the American Legacy Foundation and the Ad Council. Get the facts at don'tpassgas.org.
I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. I'm lucky to grow up where I could be whatever I want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
I ran across an article that was titled Michigan Among States with Largest Income Gap. Well, there are some very poignant reasons why that happens to be true. And the author of the study that investigated this income gap joins us now on First Shift. My guest is Dr. Lawrence Michel. He is the president of the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., and he is the author of a study titled The Decline of Collective Bargaining and the Erosion of Middle-Class Incomes in Michigan. And Dr. Michel, I want to welcome you this morning to First Shift. Thank you for giving us your time.
Well, it's great to be on with you.
I have to tell you, I found the article interesting, but I found the study and in your work, all 23 pages of it, to be mesmerizing. And it almost reads very much like a slice of history under a magnifying glass. I want to thank you for taking the time to do this piece, because it certainly does underline in a very critical way the importance of organized labor in today's workforce.
Well, what we do point out is that, Michigan has had problems over the last 30 years, and a lot of that has been driven by the erosion of collective bargaining. Michigan has more collective bargaining now than many other states, but it's also seen some of the largest erosion. But it's also true that Michigan, as in the nation as a whole, there's been a lot of growth of income. It just hasn't gotten to the middle-class workers who help produce that wealth. For instance, we point out that the workers produce 35% more per hour work now than back in 1979, but the typical worker makes 10% less than back in 1979, and that is very much related to the loss of collective bargaining in Michigan.
Well, as you may or may not be aware, Dr. Lawrence Michel, here in the state of Michigan, we have a proposal on our ballot November 6th that would enshrine into our Constitution the right to collective bargain. We have had a very radical right-leaning legislature that has really sponsored and passed over 200 pieces of anti-worker, anti-middle-class legislation, which is the reason for the push for this constitutional amendment. But as I look at this study, it seems to me that this is a fairly reasonable rationalization as to why what is called Proposal 3 is critical to passage.
Well, I think that is a very relevant proposal. I think people understand that there's a basic right to be able to link together to provide voice to their employers as to what the workers need and feel is appropriate. And anything that violates that is something that bothers people. But there's a lot of attacks on that right. That along with many other things in this nation over the last 30 years. I mean, we have lowered what the minimum wage is, the ability of people to know their rights about things like overtime pay. I mean, you can be an assistant manager at a 7-Eleven, be called a manager, and then be forced to work 60 hours a week with no overtime pay. It's pretty ridiculous. Basic labor standards. I'm putting the right to collective bargaining in the broader context of an erosion of basic labor standards that make sure that when there is competition between employers, it's about improving efficiency and improving products, and not who can really abuse workers the most.
Well, you know, let's kind of break this down a little bit, because as we look at what's now happening in organized labor, I mean, there are certain economic realities. We understand that, Dr. Michel. And so when we've got a new, I'll use the automotive sector as an example. When we negotiate a new deal with the big three, the two-tier wage system comes into play. But again, there are certain economic realities. The bottom line is, take away that negotiation or that right to collective bargaining, and we can almost guarantee that there would have been no bonuses, as an example. We may not have seen a propping up of benefits, in healthcare more specifically. And I could go on. The collective bargaining process, even in a challenged economy, is critical, not to make sure that we get as much of our piece of pie as possible, but to make sure that there's fairness and democracy in the workplace. Or am I not seeing this properly?
Well, I think you're right. I think I would add another dimension to this, which is that when there is collective bargaining and a strong presence in a particular sector, industry, or occupation, then the employers who are not covered by agreements tend to follow, so that there is a standard set, and that the benefits of collective bargaining really filters out to many, many more people. And, UAW has a great tradition of negotiating things that then become prevalent for the rest of the workforce in the nation. And I'm sure that's been true in Michigan. So that the erosion of blue-collar wages in Michigan is very much related to, of course, part of it is the erosion of manufacturing itself, but some of it is also the erosion of the presence of collective bargaining. So it is something that the workers who are directly affected, definitely have benefits, and no matter what economic circumstance where the industry is doing well or struggling, they would be better to have a voice. But it's also the other people that are not directly covered that are also beneficiaries.
Do you find that people understand the overall, people understand the correlation between the collective bargaining process and median family income?
Well, I think the people that are older, meaning, let's say, 50 years and up, where they may understand that historically it was the presence of strong collective bargaining which set standards for everybody. I think, unfortunately, for younger people, they may not understand it as much because it hasn't touched their lives as directly. But I think that, it is true, and it's documented over and over and over in lots of academic research, rigorous research. It's not the complete reason why the middle class hasn't done well over the last 30 years, but, for instance, it does explain for men around a third of the wage inequality, the reason why middle class workers haven't kept up with those at the very top, and around 20% of the growth of wage inequality among women has been the erosion of collective bargaining over the last 30 years.
Well, it is remarkable. There's no question, again, that the study that's titled The Decline of the Collective Bargaining and the Erosion of Middle Class Incomes in Michigan is again, it reads compellingly. Let me ask you, what led you to even do this study and write this this brief?
Well, I've studied the effect of collective bargaining on workers' wages since I was a graduate student, and that was many years ago. I graduated in 1982. I did live in Michigan for a few years in the mid-80s. I'm very familiar with Michigan and care about that, and I think this is a topic that is very relevant right now in Michigan. So I have addressed this at the nation as a whole. What I was able to do was to bring the facts to bear on Michigan specifically, to look at what happened to Michigan's income distribution And it is true that the inequality of income in Michigan grew more than almost all the other states. That and what that has meant is that the top 5% has done very well, in fact, better than the nation as a whole, but the middle class has actually seen their incomes fall. I mean, Michigan used to have middle class incomes that were 13% above the nation, and now that those incomes are 6% below the national average. And that is very much related to the very large-scale erosion of collective bargaining in Michigan.
Well, you know, and now we go back to we'll go back to the question here with our Proposal 3, which enshrines collective bargaining in the Constitution. Some say, well, that's not really a constitutional issue. But don't you believe, as I do, Dr. Lawrence Michel, that the collective bargaining is a right and therefore should be afforded some protection under the Constitution?
Well, it is a right considered by the United Nations in the Declaration of Human Rights. It was passed after World War II. And so it is viewed around the world as a basic right. And I think most people think of it as a basic right.
All right. Dr. Michel, I want to ask you to hold that thought. We've got to get to the break. And we'll come back and talk more and conclude our interview. My guest again, Dr. Lawrence Michel. He is the author of the briefing paper, The Decline of Collective Bargaining and the Erosion of Middle-Class Incomes in Michigan, also the president of the Economic Policy Institute, and you're going to find them online at epi.org, epi.org. A very quick break here. We'll be back. Hi, Tony Trupiano here. One of my pet projects for 2012 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the Internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org. That's www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's free as well. So if you have to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says Register to Vote right here. We all care about our democracy, but if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are, without voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we have all had enough of that. Again, go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button now and register.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Sound off on our Facebook page, facebook.com/1310WDTWAM.
Recently on First Shift.
Junior Senator from the state of Michigan, Debbie Stabenow, who joins us now.
You know, we in Michigan are a tough, independent lot. Folks expect you to work hard and earn their vote, and so I work hard to do that every day. And having lived in Michigan my whole life, I feel a real commitment to Michigan to make sure that I'm there in the middle of the fights that are going to make the difference for us.
First Shift on 1310 WDPW.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Marilyn Olson, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
Is America truly the land of the free?
when working families have to struggle to survive. Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
My guest, Dr. Lawrence Michel. He is the president of the Economic Policy Institute. Again, you'll find them online at epi.org, epi.org. His study, his briefing paper, The Decline of Collective Bargaining and the Erosion of Middle-Class Incomes in Michigan. At a time, Dr. Michel, when we see record profits, we see corporations seemingly very healthy, we are not seeing a commensurate increase in wages. In fact, we're seeing people, less people being asked to do more. Productivity is up, wages are down. This is not an accident, is it?
You're correct. In fact, we released a book, which we've been doing every other year since 1988, called The State of Working America. I commend that to people, which comprehensively documents these trends. And it's been going on for quite a while. In the last 10 years, even before the Great Recession, there's been no growth in wages and benefits for workers, even though productivity has been rising. And that includes people with a college degree as well as those with less education than that. So we've had a lost decade for working families. Now that comes after a 20-year period in the 1980s and 1990s, which also was a great struggle for the middle class. The only period in the 80s and 90s where people saw any income growth was 4 or 5 years in the late 1990s when we had very low and persistently low unemployment. And the reason is not that there wasn't income, and not that we workers were not producing more per hour. The fact was that the economy was being structured so that the fruits of economic growth went to the very top but did not really get to the vast middle. And that's because the erosion of individual and collective bargaining power of workers. I mean, a lower minimum wage, the erosion of collective bargaining, the pressure from globalization, which was done in a particular way that disadvantaged workers, not for the benefit of us all. These are policies that were implemented, and other policies were blocked that might have helped people. So it's a matter of policy and politics and not because of the economy itself. It could have been different, and it also applies to the future. People have very low expectations about what's possible, but in fact, all the projections are that we will be producing lots more growth of income per person in this country. The real question is, is the vast middle class going to share in that?
Wow, this is just fascinating stuff. It amazes me, Dr. Lawrence Michel, as we take a look at the assault on organized labor. We often talk on the show about budgets being moral documents. You know, the way we look at wages, I think, says something about our morality as well. If I'm an employer and I am enjoying a particular amount of success, the idea that we owe the workers nothing for that, to me, is just utter poppycock. It's ridiculous to make that assumption. And of course, you take away the component that we're talking about. You take away union representation. Well, then, you know, it's beyond a difficult task to expect income equality, because it's just not going to manifest that way.
Well, I think that's a fair point. And I think it's not up to the particular morality of an individual employer. I mean, no single employer can just raise wages by 30% and get by. But if the industry as a whole adopts particular labor standards so that it's understood that workers are going to gain along with the growth of the efficiency of the firms and their own profitability, then everyone can be better off. What we've seen in this country over the last 30 years or so is that economic policy has devalued people earning a good wage and having a quality job. The emphasis has been on competition to get better prices for people, to erode costs, to try to take away OSHA regulations, weaken unions, weaken the minimum wage, deregulate industries like trucking and telecommunications, all of which had the effect of a serious deterioration in wages and the quality of jobs. Now, it was said to make us better off in terms of the prices of things we buy, but the fact is that these policies made it harder for people to earn a living to actually buy the things for which supposedly there were better prices. It hasn't worked out that well for the vast majority.
Before we have to let you go, is there any way to turn this around?
There's absolutely ways. It takes policies that are going to, and many of them, not one particular thing. But we have to have policies which have as their point getting good jobs at good wages for people. It starts right now with getting the unemployment rates down so that people have some more individual bargaining power. We expect high unemployment as far as I can see. And there's a gridlock in Washington about doing something. It is true that the president's policies will do more to help jobs. I think the other team's policies will actually lead to an erosion of jobs. So that's first and foremost. But then we have to be able to do things like build up collective bargaining, have a higher minimum wage, enforce labor standards, make sure people have the right to and actually collect overtime pay, and build in the notion that we need labor standards so that employers are competing against each other for better prices, for improved efficiency, and better products, but not about who can get away with basically hurting their workers and eroding wages and economic security for their workforce.
Well, again, just fascinating stuff. I can't thank you enough for being with us this morning. Again, the website is epi.org, epi.org. The briefing paper, again, is titled The Decline of Collective Bargaining and the Erosion of Middle-Class Incomes in Michigan. Dr. Lawrence Michel, I can't thank you enough for being with us. Fascinating conversation.
Great. And congratulations to all the Detroit Tiger fans.
No, thank you. We appreciate that a great deal. I'm sure we'll visit again.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Dr. Lawrence Michel.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us, like us, love us. At Tony Trupiano on Twitter and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Trupiano or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310WDTW.com today.
What I Want to Be When I Grow Up by Johnny Mike.
Dad, it's John. I got the promotion. We'll call him John Jr.
You'll speak over 500 million words in your lifetime, but none of them will be as important as the words you use to tell your six-year-old he has cancer. CureSearch.org connects you to the most comprehensive research and advice on childhood cancer and to other families who know exactly what you're going through. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Sound off on our Facebook page, facebook.com/1310WDTWAM. This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW, Dearborn, Detroit. Listen on iHeartRadio.
NBC News Radio, I'm Bartnecker. So far, there have been no reports of any major violations of the ceasefire in Gaza between Israel and Hamas. The pact put an end to 8 days of bloodshed. NBC's Martin Fletcher is watching from Tel Aviv.
Good news so far. It's all quiet. There was a false alarm here this morning in Israel. A couple of sirens went off, but no rockets have been fired. So far, the ceasefire is holding after it went into effect at 9 o'clock local time last night.
Emails show the burial at sea of Osama bin Laden last year followed traditional Islamic procedures. Navy SEALs killed bin Laden at his compound in Pakistan. Because of Hurricane Sandy, both the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island will not reopen this year. Lady Liberty herself did not sustain any significant damage, but docks, a promenade, railings, and other facilities need to be repaired. At Ellis Island, they need to repair doors, windows, and exhibits. This is NBC News Radio. Parts of New York City are still recovering from Superstorm Sandy, but tradition is being maintained as the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade steps off in Manhattan. NBC's Jay Gray is there.
This tradition really begins with the inflation of those giant balloons. 16 giant balloon characters and 40 smaller balloons will be a part of this parade. And thousands showed up yesterday to see their favorite characters come to life with a little help from a lot of helium here.
Potential problems with the spare tire is leading to a recall of about 150,000 Toyota pickup trucks, 2001 to 2004 Tacoma pickups in 20 cold weather states in the District of Columbia. The metal lift plate may break and the spare may drop off. Iowa Governor Terry Branstad says it's time to abandon the state's now infamous straw poll. Critics say the caucuses have become an unfair and false test that felled good candidates. I'm Barton Eckert, NBC News Radio.
This Thanksgiving and Black Friday, unwrap huge savings from Sprint. Save $150 on an unlimited edition Samsung Galaxy S3. The ultimate way to connect, capture, and share, now for only $49.99. Visit your Sprint store on Black Friday or beat the rush Thursday and Friday at Sprint.com.
Coverage and offer not everywhere or on all plans. Subject to 2-year agreement, credit, activation, and early termination fees. Excludes taxes. Network use rules and restrictions apply. See store for details.
To give one special gift. It shows that you love what they do. It gives them cheer all through the year. You always hear, thank you.
Give a, give a, give a, give a Garmin. Give a, give a, give a, give a Garmin.
Find something fun for everyone. Garmin.com.
Internet sales on the Monday after Thanksgiving are expected to surge 17% over last year to a total of more than $50 billion. Good for retailers, but perhaps a red flag for those worried about cybersecurity for shoppers. Nishant Money of Dashlane.
When they use the same password in many different websites, if a hacker ever gets access to one of their passwords, it means they immediately get access to a whole bunch of other accounts that this user has.
If you have trouble remembering a number of different passwords, Dashlane has a way for you to keep track of the codes and more securely.
Dashlane generates strong, unique passwords for you and saves them locally within your own machine. And as you go to a website, it automatically detects that you're on that website and auto-logins you.
You can check that out at Dashlane.com, or you can keep a paper record someplace, but vary the passwords and don't save your personal or credit card information on the different sites where you shop. I'm Elisa Parenti from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Mom, I can't
do my math homework. I just don't get it. I'm no good at math. I hate math.
I've always considered myself a good mother, but when it came to my son Billy's math, I was at a loss. It wasn't that he didn't try, but he kept falling further behind and losing confidence. Then a friend told me about Math Made Easy DVDs. You can order any subject from arithmetic to fractions, percents, algebra, even calculus. Concepts are simplified in an entertaining way, so students enjoy learning at their own pace, in the convenience of home. It's as easy as watching TV. Best of all, it's affordable for everyone. Listen, end the frustration. Call Math Made Easy. Call now for a 30-day risk-free trial. 866-568-MATH. Now that school is in full swing, it's important for your child to keep up with the fast-moving classroom pace. With Math Made Easy, your child will always be prepared and one step ahead. Call now, 866-568-MATH. That's 866-568-6284.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
This Friday after Thanksgiving at Ace.
The weekend is coming!
Take back Black Friday with a slow cooker on sale for $7.99 plus a $5 mail-in rebate.
The weekend is coming!
So visit your local Ace and get saving, then get your weekend back. At Ace, the helpful place. $11.99 value, limit one rebate per person, only valid Friday, November 23rd. Additional conditions may apply.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
See store for details.
Give a garden. You want to give one special gift. It shows that you love what they do. It gives them cheer all through the year. You always hear, thank you.
Give a garden.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano will return live to 1310 AM this Monday. We now present some of our favorite moments from past shows. Happy holidays and enjoy.
I turn my attention now to an op-ed that was in this weekend's Detroit Free Press. The guest commentary is titled, Why Can't Republicans Figure Out How to Win the White House? And joining us now is Ryan Fishman. Ryan's in Birmingham. He describes himself as a lifelong Republican who grew up in a family of Democrats, the poor guy. He is the vice president of strategic consultation at Steward Media. And, Ryan, I want to welcome you to First Shift this morning, and thanks for spending some time with us.
Tony, don't you want to know what they did wrong?
I think we can probably have that discussion. I think we know what they did wrong. I got to tell you, of course, you know I'm very liberal. I know you're very conservative. But you and I are going to agree on a lot of stuff this morning. And I want to start with this, Ryan. I was talking about this in the last hour. In order to have, I think, real hearty debate, in order to find true compromise, in order to plug a lot of holes that we have in our economic system, in our social system, and so on and so forth, we need two vibrant and relevant parties. And I don't think we have two vibrant, relevant parties right now. Your thoughts on that?
I think the problem with the modern Republican Party and the modern Democratic Party, too, because both parties are sort of doing the exact same thing, is they're shifting to the ends of the spectrum. They don't see that they're going to win in their primaries if they're trying to come to the middle. And so what you wind up with is a lot of candidates on the left and the right who have made erratic promises to people that, frankly, they can't keep for the sake of our stability, for the sake of bipartisanship, for the sake of moving forward. And the debate has become very odd, and it's not about the issues, and it's not about how we fix our problems. It's all about catering to fringe players, and I think if we can fix that in both parties, or we at least try to move both parties forward to the middle, we can start to solve the problems that we have. And then after that, maybe we can go back and have some of these ancillary discussions.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about your party. And actually, you say, and this was a really well-written piece, Ryan. I really enjoyed your analysis. And you say that you actually maybe consider yourself more a conservative than a Republican. How hard was that to write?
You know, it wasn't that difficult because this is something that's gone on in my head for a few years. You know, first, I'll say this. I go back to, yes, being a a lifelong Republican in the House of Democrats, my mom an MEA teacher for 40 years, so that's why I write so well. I have to credit a Democrat for that. But ultimately, and I worked on George Bush's campaign in 2004. I was there through 2008, and then there was a lot of this sort of religious right sort of bubbling up and coming through in it. And it came up really 2006, those midterm elections, and I had questions about my faith in the Republican Party. And then after 2008, when the Tea Party resurfaced, a lot of people will disagree with me on this point, maybe not Democrats, but the Tea Party, I don't think, was any re-embodiment of great economic principles. It was another way for the religious right to repackage itself and say the exact same things, but with a new brand and a new identity. It worked. It was hot. It was fresh. It brought people into the fold. But now we have this ongoing battle to keep pushing our party farther and farther out to the religious spectrum. So it's not so difficult for me to say. I've really come to terms with this over the last 5, 6, 7 years, the fact that the Republican Party is moving in a direction that I'm not particularly fond of. But having said that, I'm still, in my mind, closer to a Republican the way, let's say, Ronald Reagan might have called himself a Republican, or the way Abraham Lincoln might have called himself a Republican. Small government and solving the problems in our country through small government, less intrusion into the fiscal system. And frankly, as I wrote in the column, big government doesn't need to come up because our church disagrees with the way people's social morality and values are going. We don't have to grow the size of government because we don't like what somebody else does in our own home. We just have to preach at home what we want our family to be, and that's how you preserve that part of the party's values.
Wow. The Republican Party needs to hire you as their chief strategist, because everything you've just said made way too much sense, Ryan. I think that's, and again, that's as true on the Democratic side. I think one of the things that Democrats have perhaps figured out better than Republicans is we don't necessarily feel like we've got to agree on everything, and we don't. Republicans, especially whatever we want to call the current day Republican Party, and I really noticed this the last 8 or 10 weeks of the campaign, if you don't agree with everything that's being said on the Republican side, then you're just not a Republican. And I think ultimately that hurt the brand in a pretty fantastic way. Listen, whether we can argue whether or not the president received a mandate on Election Day, whether that's true or not. But one thing we cannot debate is that the Republicans lost the White House on Election Day.
I think fundamentally, you make a very valid point. And as a matter of fact, when I was still in your business a few years ago after the 2008 election, I had a conversation with James Carville, who, you know, love him or hate him, Republicans, a lot of them don't like him. He made a very, very valid point along those lines, and his was, after a presidential election or any major election season loss, the Democrats sort of do this thing where they go out in a field somewhere and they sing Kumbaya and they figure out how they're going to work together for the next 4 years. And the Republicans start cutting heads off, and everybody wants to fight, and everybody wants to blame each other, and nobody can sort of work together. And having had some campaigns in this election cycle that I worked on and then we lost, one of the things that we found it most important to do afterwards was sit down and figure out what did we do wrong and what did we do right the next time. And that, I think, is the fundamental thing Republicans failed to do. And it's unfortunate, because if we did sit down and analyze why we weren't successful and how we move forward together and in a positive way, we might be turning one election cycle loss into three election cycle wins. But we seem to struggle with that. And ultimately, the worst thing that we could continue to do now is splinter and move right. If the Republicans don't move center now and work with Democrats and work with the president and solve the problems we have, there's no chance of success in 4 more years, because nobody will trust us.
Wow. Well, no, there's a statement. Kind of made me a little speechless there, Ryan Frischman. All right. So yeah. here's the question: do you envision that the John Boehner led House and the Mitch McConnell led Senate will do exactly what you just said? Will they work with their colleagues? Will they work with the president? Do they understand the reason they did not win is because America doesn't see them as being willing to compromise?
I hope so. I can't promise anything, but I certainly hope so. And I think the place to start, frankly, is, and I know this is sort of a tough matzo ball for people to swallow, but I think the place to start is having Democrats who are centrists, guys like Gary Peters, who I personally vote for and support. I actually can't anymore because I was gerrymandered out of his district, but there are a lot of great moderate Democrats in the House and in the Senate, the former statesmen, if you will, that I don't want to say Ted Kennedy necessarily, but, you know, these iconic sort of members of the House and Senate leaders were moderate people who knew how to build relationships across the aisle. What we need to do is have guys like Gary Peters try and reach their hand out and find partners in the Republican Party, because they're so good at doing that, and convince those guys that we have to work together. And then I think there is a job to be done at the top, and I think I've heard John Boehner and Mitch McConnell say this in the last few days. It's time for us to figure out how we're going to sit at the table and what we're going to do. If we don't do that, that's the end of the modern era of leadership. And I think it's a question of job security. If I was a Republican in the House or Senate right now and worried about reelection in another 2 years or 4 years, I'd be thinking about how I'm going to get reelected, because as a political strategist, I always think about how people get reelected. And my thought, my point to anybody would be, you've got to make yourself look like somebody who's willing to go to Washington and work, because the approval ratings are at an all-time low. And the reason is people think that people in politics don't want to work on anything.
Now, unfortunately, Ryan Fishman, there's a great deal of truth to what you've just said. I don't imagine, as liberal as I am, I also understand the reality of our economy. I also understand the reality of policy. I also understand the fiscal the cliff that we truly are on. This is not a made-up subject matter. We have trillions of dollars of debt. It's not going to get better. We do have to look at creative ways to solve problems, but we also need to be able to have a discussion about it without the fringes on either side trying to co-opt the message and make it sound like if we don't do it their way, then we have committed some kind of serial murder, because that doesn't promote any idea that matters. Ryan, stay with us. We've got to take a quick break here. Much more to get to after we take the break. I want you to notice we have not once had this question. Was this Mitt Romney's fault? I'm not sure it was. 888-552-3595 if you want to join us. Ryan Fishman, my guest. I'm Tony Truppiano. We'll be back.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
speed pouring, drink recipes, customer service skills the industry is looking for, and much more. All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5022.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan. Your future is waiting for you now.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter.
Follow us, like us,
love us. At Tony Truppiano on Twitter and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Truppiano page today.
Hey, I'm Miles Austin, and I made the switch.
It's your boy 50 Cent.
Hi, it's Joan Rivers.
Paulie D here.
And this is Wes Welker, and I made the switch too, to a better source of energy. We're always under pressure to perform.
That's when I need a boost to be my best.
Instead of those chemical-filled sports drinks, I drink SK Energy Shots. They're made with antioxidants and vitamins.
No jitters, no crash.
Just a smooth rush of energy that tastes great.
So we always feel on top of our game.
Yeah, buddy.
New SK Energy Shots. Make the switch to a better source of energy. Available at 7-Eleven, Planet Fitness, and your local retailers.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off, than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers
workers free to achieve the American dream.
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Are drugs affecting your family or a friend? Call Narcanon, 1-800-468-6933. Narcanon provides free assessment and referral services. Call Narcanon at 1-800-468-6933 or visit our website at stopaddiction.com.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together, until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members. A place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen, be heard, take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
Come on, guest is Ryan Fishman. Ryan is a vice president of strategic consulting at Steward Media and author of the op-ed, Why Can't Republicans Figure Out How to Win the White House? Ryan, you know, my next question to you is kind of twofold. That's a big question to ask. Why can't they win? But let's start with branding, something you know a little bit about. Obviously, the Republican brand is not what it once was. And when we break down demographics from the election, we know that there are a lot of, and this is not a racial statement, but there are a lot of white men within the Republican Party. But they're not appealing to minorities. They're not appealing to Latinos. They're not appealing to African Americans. We, in fact, a couple weeks ago, had a documentary filmmaker on that did a film called Fear of a Black Republican. And if we had more time, I'd go into that in greater detail. But let's talk about branding. Is that the first battle, is rebranding the Republican Party?
I think that's certainly a place to start. But you can't just rebrand without actually changing the way that we do business. I think if, and I know one of your questions is going to be, is Mitt Romney to blame? But he's, I don't think he is necessarily for the reason we lost. But I would say one reason we lost is we didn't make that fundamental reach to communities that are minorities where we could have given them a chance at descriptive representation. What I mean by that is, had Mitt Romney gone with Marco Rubio instead of Paul Ryan, he would have made a fundamental step for the Republican Party to show that it's not just about white men, it is about everybody. And here's a young, fresh leader from the state of Florida, a swing state, not like Wisconsin, where he maybe could have garnered some votes. So even as a strategic position, I think it would have made more sense. But ultimately, yes, if you look at the numbers, Mitt Romney didn't do as poorly as John McCain did with women, but it still was a double-digit drop-off from where the president was both 2008 and 2012. Republicans have to reach out to women, and I can't tell you how many times, even working with a pro-choice Republican running in a Republican primary, six candidates, so like I was the only pro-choice option, we had so much trouble getting crossover voters, particularly women, because they said, I've foreclosed on your entire party. I'm not interested. This could be the greatest leader in the world, but I have no interest in voting for a Republican. It's not going to happen. So we have to get over the hump with women. We certainly have to get over the hump with African Americans, because African Americans and Latinos are our largest growing minorities. And that means instead of saying we're keeping everybody out, we need to, sure, beef up border security, but we also need to reform the immigration process for the people that are already here. And for African Americans, it's not about cutting welfare or cutting Social Security. It's about reconfiguring those programs. So, for example, adding drug tests to them and making sure that the money is going to people who are using it so they can rebuild their families and move forward. You know, the problem is the Republicans say cut, 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 and no new taxes, and those were great strategies in 1985 and 1990, but now we're at a fiscal cliff where if I was a new business, or I shouldn't say new business, if I was an established business and I said, I just want to cut my biggest source of revenue, because that's where the government's money comes from, is taxes, and not have any way to supplant that amount of money, it wouldn't make any sense to anybody fiscally, and that's why I'm surprised Republicans would make that sort of statement today.
How do Republicans deal with the Aikens and Murdochs of the world, where you know they are, you know, the Mitt Romney certainly had challenges with what was happening beneath him and things that were totally out of his control, but when you don't denounce something or you don't walk away from something, as women were continuing to see this spiral out of control, where the candidate could have taken control of a conversation and just chose to ignore it. The whole 47% video and how that became its own story. First, we deny it, then we agree that it was inappropriate. There were a lot of mistakes, but I don't believe that's why the Republicans lost the White House. I do think it's a foundational difference in an ideology that America is just moving beyond it. And Ryan, I've got to ask you. Well, I guess we'll get to that first, and then I've got to ask you about your demographic, because I think your demographic is the demographic the Republican Party is ignoring. But let's start with that. How do you deal with those fringe people like Aiken and Murdoch in your party that make it impossible, as you said, to find that crossover vote?
It's incredibly difficult because there are a lot of people like Todd Aiken out there in the Republican Party. They're not all necessarily elected to office, but they agree with the philosophy, and it's the philosophy that has to change. Obviously, there's a lot of scientists in the world that would say the Republicans don't know what they're talking about on more issues than just legitimate rape, but we have to fix the problem by making it clear at the top that, for example, I mean, I know there are Republicans who are going to fundamentally disagree with this, but for example, that if we were in the White House, we weren't going after Roe v. Wade. You know, we were going to let that battle die. That's certainly what I would suggest. But we have these guys, the Todd Aikens of the world, and even the Paul Ryans. I mean, Paul Ryan in Congress, and I can't defend this in good conscience, did vote and work to shrink the definition of there's the dollars from the government that go to certain abortion cases, and he wanted to shrink that from all cases of rape to only cases of forcible rape. I mean, that's a little difficult to defend when it's your vice president on the ticket, and that's why I think we didn't necessarily see Mitt Romney, who, you know, we could debate this all day, but I think the guy was pro-choice before. He's probably still pro-choice now. He sort of had to stick that in the closet to get through the primary, but I just couldn't see where he was going to make any sort of move on abortion, because Paul Ryan was so adamantly not only pro-life, but pro-life in circumstances of rape. And seemingly, I would assume, his right-to-life requests in all circumstances, because it's God's will.
All right, and we've got very little time left. Let's talk about the demographic you represent. I believe that that's where the Republican Party needs to live. And in many ways, Ryan, I'm going to suggest that your demographic is much more socially liberal. I'm not saying liberal. I said socially liberal. And as a result of that, LGBT issues don't bother you the way they did your fathers and grandfathers. And I could go on and on and on. Do you believe that they need to find a way to attract you and people like you?
Yes, and I don't think it's just young people. I mean, certainly I'm young for a Republican, but it's a lot of businessmen across this country. Particularly, you see this in the Jewish faith, because we don't put the same. Even the Orthodox Jews don't put the highest priority on all circumstances of abortion, for example. But there's a lot of businessmen in this country who don't care about the social issues. They don't want the government to waste their time. They don't want to be taxed to have to deal with it. What they want the government to focus on is, number one, the economy, and number two, national security. So preserving what's going on inside our country and then making a difference outside our country. And I think you would see some of the top guys on the Forbes list in this country who are Republicans say the exact same thing. For me, it's about business first, and that's one of the things I said in my column. Yeah, sure, I voted with my checkbook, and I have Democrat friends. My closest friend would say, you have to vote with your conscience. You have to vote with your heart. Unfortunately, in this election, I didn't make that decision, but I think the Republican Party has to move to a place where it really is the party of small government. And I know you call it socially liberal to be pro-choice and to support gay marriage, but I think that ultimately is even more conservative, because we're saying we don't want the government to play a role there.
I can't disagree with that, Ryan. We're just out of time. I have a feeling we'll be visiting again. I can't thank you enough for this conversation to be continued, my friend.
Absolutely.
All right, Ryan Fishman, once again. We've got to get to a break.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us,
like us,
love us. At Tony Truppiano on Twitter, and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Truppiano page today.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Ew! It stinks in here.
Passing gas. Is there a right time and a wrong time to do it?
Come on, huh? I'm trying to eat.
When indoors in the company of others, passing gas is not only taboo, it can be deadly.
I'm gagging.
Passing gas releases a plume of toxic vapors like ammonia and hydrogen cyanide.
Ah, you're killing us over here.
Every year, hundreds of infants exposed to passed gas die.
What? I cracked a window?
And just opening a window isn't enough. These deadly fumes can linger in the room for hours after odors have dissipated.
Daddy, you promised you'd smoke outside.
You're right, Pumpkin. Excuse me.
If you smoke, take it outside. Don't pass gas. A message from the American Legacy Foundation and the Ad Council. Get the facts at don'tpassgas.org.
Attention swimmers! Get out of the water! Everybody, out of the water immediately!
Dude, is that... It's a pair of thunder thighs. Big ones, too. That mom, who's been swimming a lot with her kids, must have lost them.
Whoa. I heard about this happening once up at Laguna.
Small step number 54. Play with your kids. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Recently on First Shift.
Welcome, Tom in Detroit.
The one gentleman, the rich ultra-billionaire, that, as you called it, wasted $140 million, and it would have been better to give it to the poor. What do you think, where do you think that $140 million went? What happened to it? Did he just burn it? The money is spent on advertisement, hotels, anything to do. That money is spent. It put people to work. That money wasn't just, they didn't just burn it.
Oh, so now Sheldon Adelson's a job creator. That's what you're saying.
It sure certainly is.
First Shift with Tony Truppiano on 1310 WDPW.
Hi, Tony Truppiano here. One of my pet projects for 2012 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org. That's www.thetonyshow.org. www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's free as well. So, if you have yet to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says Register to Vote right here. We all care about our democracy, but if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are, without voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we have all had enough of that. Again, go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button now and register.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Trupiano, or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310wdtw.com today.
I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. I'm lucky to grow up where I could be whatever I want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Listen, this conversation is a conversation that's going on statewide. It's happening in the blogosphere. It's happening in our major newspapers. It's happening on the radio and on television. The question is, what's happened to Oakland County? Why are they turning blue? And I mean that in a good way, not in a bad way. And what's to account for this? Well, it's an important discussion. I think it's one we need to have. So we are. And we turn now to my friend Frank Houston, who is chairman of the Oakland County Democratic Party. And we welcome him back to First Shift with a hearty congratulations, Mr. Chairman, on a great election day for Oakland County.
Thank you, Tony. And thanks for having me back.
It is my pleasure. Listen, I think that there was no one more surprised by Jim Nash's election than Jim Nash. And I mean that in the best possible way. Jim was kind enough to join us a handful of times pre-election and actually called us the day after the election. I could hear the enthusiasm, the thrill, and, okay, a little shock in his voice. I mean, he told me. I have to keep telling myself, I'm the Water Resource Commissioner.
Well, fortunately with Jim, we have a good guy who's, I mean, he's got experience as a legislator, as a county commissioner. By nature, he's a policy wonk, and he's one of those people, he's progressive, but he's policy driven, and I think he's one of those folks who's going to focus on what's good for the public and not what's necessarily in the best interest of a few special interests. So I think he's the right type of person for the job, and I think it'd be great.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be a little transient.
Yeah, and Frank, and one of the things that impressed me about Jim Nash, and I think the same can be said for Lisa Brown and Andy Meisner and others, is that they actually want their jobs. The current Water Resource Commissioner is always looking for that next thing. In fact, he's got almost $500,000 in the bank and still loses a race to a guy that raised $25,000. And I get it. And I said this repeatedly on the show. Your choice in Oakland County is to either reelect a guy that doesn't want the job or elect a guy that does. Jim Nash wanted the job.
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, obviously, the former Water Resource Commissioner McAuliffe had, you know, talked about briefly running for U.S. Senate. There was always talk about him wanting to succeed Brooks, to use that as a stepping stone to U.S. Senate. And, I think the reality is, in 08, he almost lost the election running against a guy who put his name on the ballot just so we had someone on there for the party. And then with Jim, you had a candidate who worked a little harder, had a little bit more of a base, and they got him a couple thousand votes. What is shocking, though, Tony, is exactly what you said. The fact that he sat on over $400,000, which is the same thing he did in 08 when he almost lost. And I think sometimes, you know, as an elected official or as a candidate, you need to actually put the chips down for the office you want. And he obviously didn't want it. I think he nailed it. We have a better Water Resource Commissioner probably for it.
Yeah, and you definitely have a better count and clerk for it, and certainly retain a treasurer that is aces in my book. But Frank, let's go back to the bigger question. And you're seeing it everywhere. In fact, there's even been some national chatter about Oakland County. It is no longer, and I'm just going to quote the article, the Republican firewall that it once was. And in fact, we are beginning to see what's happening in Oakland bleed into Macomb County. Their board of their board of county commissioners got a little more blue as well in this election cycle. So what do we attribute this to? I know great leadership. I'll give you that. I mean, the chairman of the Oakland County Republican or Democratic Party is a great guy. But beyond that great leadership, Frank, what do we attribute this to?
Well, I think there's a three or four main factors, probably the most important ones. I mean, everyone's talking about the demographic shifts. And we all know Oakland County and Metro Detroit's changing. It's diversified. And it's not just folks from the city coming north. It's also people coming in the area. We have a growing Chaldean community. We have a growing Asian American community. You know, in places like Troy, as you know, Tony, you know, it's 20% Asian American now. I mean, and that's not in one cluster of the city. That's citywide. Almost every single precinct reflects that. So there's obviously changing demographics, but that's a long-term trend. That takes 10-plus years, you know, for us to get to where we're at now. It'll take another 10-plus years before, you know, someone like Dr. Taj, for instance, that'll be a benefit versus a hindrance in certain communities. But the thing that I want to hit on is, aside from the demographic changes, I think a lot of this is reaction to the radicalization of the Republican Party. I mean, when you have U.S. Senate candidates saying some of the things they did that are obviously offensive to not just women, but anyone with common sense, I mean, you know, you have that sort of extreme nature, and then you have a candidate like Mitt Romney, who, although born and raised in Oakland County, I don't think most people here could recognize who he was, or I don't even know if he knows who he is. And that sort of kind of, looking for the tea leaves to tell you where to go sort of leadership is the exact opposite of how his father was, and I think it's the exact opposite of how President Obama is. And I think there's that sort of Republican Party where you have it going farther to the right, and their leaders that are, quote-unquote, the moderates seem like they're just going to go with wherever the political winds take them. It hurts the party. It hurts the candidates. It makes it the electorate having to make choices with a lot less information than they probably want. And I think in the end, that helps build the opportunity for Democratic candidates who are honest and direct about who they are and have a little bit of a good track record behind them and a base to get elected easier.
Well, you know, let's use it as an example. This is a fight that you and I talked about on this very show, the whole gerrymandering of Oakland County and what happened, and Brooks Patterson right. getting involved where he shouldn't have fought. In fact, I thought it was maybe illegal, his involvement, but we'll set that aside for Frank, I'm just telling you how I feel. So
yeah.
we'll set that aside for a moment, but gerrymandering, without gerrymandering, Jim Nash doesn't get elected. I want to remind this audience that he was actually redistricted out of his county commission seat.
Yep. I mean, it was a very blatant targeting of Jim. So just, I mean, the recap for your listening audience, I mean, if you give us a fair fight in Oakland County, basically up and down the ticket, we won. Take our county commission, for example. The final two plans that were introduced for county commission districts, the one that was the Democratic plan legally was superior at every single criteria, but the Supreme Court, because it's Republican control, didn't accept it. If we had had that quote-unquote Democratic plan that was legally or superior in every single way any attorney in the state would tell you, we would have had a majority in the county commission. But with this gerrymandered Republican one, we have one out of three seats. And you can go through the state house, you can go through Congress with, you know, the fact that we have a reindeer farmer now going to D.C. who's an extremist. This sort of redistricting, this gerrymandering of the districts is really the only thing holding back Oakland County from being a strong blue county, in my opinion. I mean, you look at all these other races, every single thing that was countywide that we were involved in, basically we had huge gains or won, in most cases both.
Well, you know, and I'll make this point. I had a conversation with somebody late last week who specifically told me that they no longer, because of the gerrymandering in Oakland County, now consider themselves an independent and are now voting for the candidate as opposed to the party because they are tired of Republicans, and this was their exact quote, cheating their way to victory decade after decade.
Yeah, I think people are catching on to that. I mean, if you look at, I mean, there's a lot of mixed results still out there for the election, and I think there's a lot of data that people are going to pore over. But it looks like our electorate is becoming a little more savvy or developing some sort of new way of evaluating politics beyond just incumbency status. And if you look, I mean, the Republican brand in Oakland County on our county-wise is pretty clear. They had a bunch of old white men who were elected for, you know, and generally handed their job in the county. Bill Board was appointed. Mike Bouchard was appointed. You know, people like Jim McAuliffe, and others. They, you know, they're all a bunch of political hacks, and Brooks is in our circle. And then if you look at the folks we had, it was more diversity. I think more people actually passionate about those jobs, not just looking for a place to collect a few more checks before they retire or a stepping stone position. And I think the bottom line is voters pick up on that.
Well, I think one of the most impressive races was for the city clerk register of deeds. Of course, Lisa Brown has great name recognition, but listen, she was, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way at all. She was a state rep. People don't make that leap mentally. They don't go, oh, well, that would make her a great, you know, clerk. They don't make that leap. Yeah. She had to make that case. She had to sell that to people, and she was very successful in doing that.
No, I think Lisa's definitely a rising star here in Oakland County, and not just because of what happened in Lansing with, you know, for basically telling people leave my vagina alone. But, you know, when you look at the clerk that she beat, Bill Bullard, he was a state house member too, who sat, you know, after getting term limit from state house, went to county commission forever and then was appointed the clerk at the same time he was breaking several campaign finance laws. So, I mean, this isn't a guy who had, in my opinion, a real commitment to the office. But, you know, setting that aside, I mean, I think you have Lisa going head-to-head with someone like Bill Bullard, who was at the time, by the way, well, he was county clerk and supposedly protecting our elections, not just breaking campaign finance laws, but also a lobbyist lobbying against county interest at times. You know, I think that's a pretty clear contrast. And although I give Lisa a lot of credit, she ran a completely positive campaign. She didn't even go after Bill Bullard for any of those things. But if you look community after community, she made huge gains based on how we did in 08. And in 08, we didn't finish that far off knocking off Ruth Johnson. So, I mean, a lot of these races, it's you know, picking up a couple percentage points district to district, and that somewhat is related to the third issue I didn't hit on earlier, Tony, to answer your questions. The third thing is great candidates. So you have this changing demographics, you have great candidates on our side that are running, and I think a little lackluster effort on their side. And then the third thing is the Republican Party, I believe, is in a little bit of disarray at least, and an identity crisis with less leadership in Oakland County than traditional, and that could be because of Brooks's health issues, or it could be because who knows if the soul of the party is going to get taken over by rational mainstream Republicans who are a little more moderate, or this continued Tea Party and radicalization of the party. These factors mean big wins for Oakland County, and I think really big wins for voters because now they have really good choices on our side and candidates who want to compete for these seats because they see it not just an automatic quote-unquote Republican county.
Now, there are a couple really important things that happen. We're going to have to take a break here in just a minute, Frank, so I'm going to ask you to stay with us through the break. But I do want to make this point. Both Jim Nash's opponent and Lisa Brown's opponent used taxpayer money under the guise of a public service announcement where they had never done it before to advertise their name and what their office did. That was criminal. I'm glad criminal behavior was rewarded by them both losing.
You're here. Yeah, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it really is disgusting. When you're the county clerk, and you're supposed to be the most nonpartisan person probably in county government, and you're protecting elections, you shouldn't be, you know, milking the trough for your own reelection. And it's disgusting, and I know Lisa will be above that and put a stop to that when she gets in there.
Absolutely. Frank, stay where you're at. We're going to take a break, quick break. Frank Houston, again, my guest, chairman of the Oakland County Democratic Party.
Over 140 Rite Aid stores are unionized with over 1,500 United Food and Commercial Workers members working with a union contract in stores all across Michigan. Because they are union members, they have access to higher wages, a company pension, a health care plan for themselves and their family, and UFCW Rite Aid workers proudly serve their communities and at the same time enjoy a living wage and benefit package. Please support our union Rite Aid workers and make sure they know how much we appreciate the work they are doing. To join the UFCW family of drugstores, visit UFCW.org or call 248-585-9671.
What I Want to Be When I Grow Up by Johnny Mike.
Dad, it's John. I got the promotion.
We'll call him John Jr.
You'll speak over 500 million words in your lifetime, but none of them will be as important as the words you use to tell your six-year-old he has cancer. CureSearch.org connects you to the most comprehensive research and advice on childhood cancer and to other families who know exactly what you're going through. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CareSearch and the Ad Council.
Recently on First Shift.
Joining me now is former Congressman and national co-chair of the Blue-Green Alliance, Mark Schauer.
What I see in Michigan is growth in the auto sector relating to producing clean vehicles and the president's fuel efficiency standards, which there was a EPA hearing in Detroit. that change, which has been embraced by a coalition of the auto industry, the UAW, and environmental groups. 13 auto companies support it because they know that's what consumers want, and they also know it will create jobs. In Michigan, it'll create about 24,000 jobs, good manufacturing jobs.
First Shift with Tony Trivano on 1310 WDTW.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
So, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
Is America truly the land of the free? When working families have to struggle to survive, are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Follow 1310 WDTW on Facebook and Twitter. Find direct links on our homepage at 1310WDTW.com.
For my guest is Frank Houston. Frank is the chairman of the Oakland County Democratic Party, where they had a massive success last Tuesday and continue to make inroads. Certainly, the beginning of that process is not that far back. Certainly, the success of Congressman Gary Peters in Oakland County really did start to move that dial, Frank. And we have to thank Congressman Peters for continuing to be both moderate where we need him to be and progressive when we want him to be.
No, I think Gary deserves a lot of credit. I mean, Congressman Peters, when he ran in 08, I think a lot of folks said, well, how are you going to take out Joe Nolenberg? He's been there for a while now. Oakland County is still very Republican, even if we vote for you know, Democrats for president. And I think Gary ran a great campaign. And I think Congressman Peters is still in office today because of the work he's done when he got there, you know, working to save the auto industry, working to take on Wall Street financial reforms that were long overdue. And, I mean, and a ton of other smaller issues. So I think Congressman Peters definitely deserves a lot of credit. But also, I think for years we've had a growing trend of getting good people elected at the local level, too. You know, we went from having five or six county commissioners out of 25 to coming within one seat of taking over the county commission in 2008. So it's also that bottom-up, not just the top-down, that has really made a difference here over the years.
Absolutely. Frank Houston, again, my guest. Let's go to the phones and welcome our mutual friend, Frank Jim Amar, to First Shift. Jim, thanks for your call this morning.
Hi, Tony. Thank you. I have several things. First, Tony, I want to thank you very, very much for your support and how you helped me in my campaign. I really appreciate it. And I want to congratulate Frank for the great job that he did and his party did in getting those people elected in Oakland County. I think that's a significant accomplishment. My question for Frank is, do you know when they're going to have the elections for the chair of the new 11th Congressional District? Has that been decided yet?
I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that's in January. But if you call the state party, they could verify that. But I think that's typically after the new year.
Okay. Very good. I appreciate that. Well, that's the only point that I can make today, Tony, but I'm listening every day, and if there's some issues that come up, I'm certainly going to call you and give you my perspective on things and how I feel.
And I always honor that, Jim. You're a good friend, and I'm only sorry that you weren't elected, but there are other fights in front of us, and I know you'll be in the middle of them. Thanks so much for your call this morning. You know, Frank, one of the things that I said before the break is money. Certainly, yep. Brooks has a lot of money. And I've got to give Kevin Howley a lot of credit. He ran as competitive a campaign as you can. And let's be honest about it. Brooks is an institution. This is not somebody that we take lightly. but he is an institution, and there are Democrats that vote for this guy. They just like that he's ballsy.
Yeah, you know, taking on Brooks Patterson, I feel like unless you're, you know, a Kevin Howley or a Brenda Lawrence or someone, you know, who's done it, you really don't know how tough it is. And I've worked closely with Kevin in 12, and I worked closely with Mayor Lawrence in 08, and, you know, it's tough. And I think, to be honest with you, Kevin would have came a lot closer if it wasn't for Brooks's accident. You know, let's just say there's a lot of questionable things with Brooks's record that it's hard to get press on when the guy is in a coma, and also when he's hiding that he was in a coma. Maybe not him, but his team. So I don't want to be insensitive to the fact that he was in an accident, but I think that really made it difficult for Kevin to be able to have a real discussion because it becomes, you know, he becomes like Clint Eastwood talking to an empty chair. And that doesn't get pressed the same way talking with Brooks Patterson does, especially with some of the crazy things that come out of his mouth. But I think the startling thing to me is not that Kevin ran a great campaign and put in a good effort. He really did, and I think he's another rising star in the party. I think the shocking thing is the fact that Brooks Patterson was in a coma, unable to talk. His county deputies lied about his ability to do the job and covered it up, and still there's been virtually no press on the fact that it was covered up. It's one thing to admit it later, but it's another thing that the lie to voters about his ability to do the job for a month or two. And I wish him well, and I hope he comes back and is the county executive as effectively as he ever has been. But the reality is we were without our county executive and had no idea what his functional abilities were. And now we find out it wasn't a lot for a couple of months. It's totally inappropriate for any elected official. I don't care if you're Governor Snyder or President Obama. It is unacceptable when you're a chief executive to lie to voters or have your deputies lie to voters about your condition and ability to do the job.
Well,
that makes it difficult.
And Frank, certainly, and the media was an accomplice in this, and shame on them. They kiss Brooks's ass. They do. The free press and the news, they both kiss his ass. They both love the guy. No one holds him accountable. The Oakland press treats him as if he's some kind of deity. I don't get it. I really don't get it. Listen, Brooks Patterson has had one really great idea in the entire time he has served Oakland County. That was Wireless Oakland, and he couldn't make it happen. So he failed on the only decent idea he ever had.
Well, I think you're preaching in the choir with me. I mean, I think Brooks has largely rested on the successes of the economy in the 90s that probably had little to do with him. And then, let's be honest, when times are tough, you know, in the last decade, Oakland County lost property value. Oakland County had record rates in foreclosures. Oakland County lost record jobs. And when the recovery came back, you know, 9 out of 10 jobs that came back to Oakland County in the last, you know, 4 years was because of the auto industry, which Brooks Patterson obviously had little to do with. So I think there's a lot of credit he seems to claim, but doesn't step up when the times are tough to help fix a lot of the problems. And I hope he comes back and is effectively able to move the county forward. But, you know, I think he's got a long recovery ahead of him. And my concern is now is if he finds out that just physically he's unable to do the job for some reason, you're then going to have this massive inner Republican circle power fight over who's the successor that, by the way, would be appointed by the county commission, which is Republican controlled and not chosen by voters. So hopefully he comes back and does the job a little better than he has the last 4 years. And, you know, I wish him well in his health as well.
Absolutely. I wish him well as well. And, Brooks, when you're feeling up to it, why don't you, one of those times where you're driving through Pontiac on M59 instead of just driving through to get to whatever bar you're going to, stop and see what your neighbors are doing. Just saying, Frank. Listen, I would imagine we'll have plenty of times to work together moving forward. You know, you're always welcome on this show. Congratulations again on the amazing operation that you've built. The Oakland County Democratic Party is a shining example of what happens when progressive voices work together towards common good. Common good is happening in Oakland County. Thanks so much, Frank.
Thanks, Tony. You have a great morning.
Yes, absolutely. Frank Houston, once again, chairman of the Oakland County Democratic Party. Folks, you got to think about what Frank has had to take on and how successful he has been doing that. The one thing that and we didn't really get to the money conversation. I know I promised we were going to do that. We never got there. And we'll perhaps have that conversation some other time. But you have to understand, Frank Houston fights big Republican money every single day. They don't have that kind of money on the Democratic side. They don't have close to that. Frank can't pick up the phone like the chairman of the Republican, Oakland County Republican Party, and just say, I need $20,000. I need $80,000. Somebody can write that check. That's not on Frank's agenda. Again, progressive, passionate voices are winning because it's the right thing to do.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us,
like us,
love us. At Tony Trupiano on Twitter and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Recently on First Shift.
Joining me now is former Congressman and National Co-Chair of the Blue-Green Alliance, Mark Schauer.
What I see in Michigan is growth in the auto sector relating to producing clean vehicles and the president's fuel efficiency standards, which there was a EPA hearing in Detroit. That change, which has been embraced by a coalition of the auto industry, the UAW, and environmental groups, 13 auto companies support it because they know that's what consumers want, and they also know it will create jobs. In Michigan, it'll create about 24,000 jobs, good manufacturing jobs.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on 1310 WDTW.
This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW, Dearborn, Detroit. Listen on iHeartRadio. NBC
News Radio, I'm Barton Eckert. Israel and Gaza's Hamas rulers have stepped back from the brink of what could have been a full-fledged war. A ceasefire agreement has ended fierce fighting. Egypt will play a key role in maintaining the peace. NBC's Ayman Moyadin is in Gaza City.
For the first time in 9 days, we're not hearing the sounds of Israeli drones or fighter jets flying above us. We're not hearing any airstrikes. Ordinary Palestinians are going about their business. Shops are opening. Stores are reopening. The question, though, on everyone's mind, though, will this ceasefire last?
Pakistani police say it was a Taliban suicide bomber that struck a Shiite Muslim procession in Rawalpindi. At least 23 people were killed and more than 60 wounded. It is the end of the line for an estimated 18,500 people employed by Irving, Texas-based Hostess Baking. The company has won permission from a bankruptcy judge to liquidate. Hostess says the process is expected to take a year. This is NBC News Radio. The annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is set to kick off in New York City this morning, and there's more. NBC's Kevin Tibbles says after families stuff themselves with Thanksgiving dinner, they can head out to stores for a bit of shopping.
Walmart, Sears, Target, Toys R Us, and Kmart are unwrapping their big doorbuster deals as early as 8 p.m. tonight on Thanksgiving.
Illinois Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. has quietly resigned from the Congress. Jackson is citing his ongoing treatment for bipolar disorder. The feds are also reported looking into his possible misuse of campaign money. The condition of 50-year-old boxing champ Hector Macho Camacho is deteriorating after he was shot Tuesday night in Puerto Rico. Camacho was shot in the face and neck. It was an apparent drive-by. He has since suffered a heart attack, and there is very low brain activity. I'm Barton Eckert, NBC News Radio.
This Thanksgiving and Black Friday, unwrap huge savings from Sprint. Save $150 on an unlimited edition Samsung Galaxy S3, the ultimate way to connect, capture, and share, now for only $49.99. Visit your Sprint store on Black Friday or beat the rush Thursday and Friday at Sprint.com.
Coverage and offer not everywhere or on all plans. Subject to 2-year agreement, credit, activation, and early termination fees. Excludes taxes. Network use rules and restrictions apply. See store for details.
This Black Friday at the Home Depot, Ryobi's OnePlus 18-volt drill and impact driver kit is only $99. It includes 2 lithium-ion batteries, a 1-hour charger, even a tool bag. A $200 value, $99. The early bird gets a special buy. Support your sleigh to the Home Depot Friday at 5 a.m. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. While supplies last through November 28th, U.S. only. See store for details.
People are upgrading their smartphones every 12 to 14 months, and that's creating a different kind of business opportunity for those looking to capitalize on all of those old phones.
We pay up to $250 or more per phone, and we buy over 250 models, and we make it a simple, safe process for them to do it in.
Mark Leff of SmartphoneTradeIn.com says the company is dialing up its nonprofit efforts, working with Operation Gratitude to offer assistance to military veterans.
We've helped nonprofits raise over $10 million through our collective cell phone buyback and recycling programs. And we made a decision for every smartphone we receive, no matter the condition, we will give Operation Gratitude $5 per phone.
If you'd like to get rid of an old phone and would also like to take part in Operation Gratitude, go to SmartphoneTradeIn.com.
They can print a free USPS shipping label directly from our website. We get the phone, we process it, and the next day they get a check from us.
I'm Elisa Parenti from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Mom, I can't do my math homework. I just don't get it. I'm no good at math. I hate math.
I've always considered myself a good mother, but when it came to my son Billy's math, I was at a loss. It wasn't that he didn't try, but he kept falling further behind and losing confidence. Then a friend told me about Math Made Easy DVDs. You can order any subject from arithmetic to fractions, percents, algebra, even calculus. Concepts are simplified in an entertaining way, so students enjoy learning at their own pace, in the convenience of home. It's as easy as watching TV. Best of all, it's affordable for everyone. Listen, in the frustration, call Math Made Easy. Call now for a 30-day risk-free trial. 866-568-MATH. Now that school is in full swing, it's important for your child to keep up with the fast-moving classroom pace. With Math Made Easy, your child will always be prepared and one step ahead. Call now, 866-568-MATH. That's 866-568-6284.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
This Friday after Thanksgiving at Ace.
The weekend is coming!
Take back Black Friday with a slow cooker on sale for $7.99 plus a $5 mail-in rebate.
The weekend is coming!
So visit your local Ace and get saving, then get your weekend back. At Ace, the helpful place. $11.99 value, limit one rebate per person, only valid Friday, November 23rd. Additional conditions may apply.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
See store for details.
You want to give one special gift. It shows that you love what they do. It gives them cheer all through the year. You always hear, thank you. Give a, give a, give a, give a garden. Give a, give a, give a, give a garden. Find something fun for everyone. Garmin.com, Garmin.com.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano will return live to 1310 AM this Monday. We now present some of our favorite moments from past shows. Happy holidays and enjoy.
Up communities and states have said, have sent a simple message that the recreational use of marijuana is something that we no longer need to keep in the closet. And in fact, in communities across the state and in states across this country, they have legalized now the use. Now, whether or not it will be followed, whether or not it will be adhered to, that's another question. We still have federal laws and we still have opinions, if you will, that are mired in now decades old. I can't say that on the air. Anyway, with all that said, it is ridiculous. The billions of dollars, the billions upon billions of dollars we have spent on the war on drugs, all of the wasted money of saying no, because God knows saying no to drugs was the message that didn't do anything. But as we take a serious look at fighting a fight that doesn't need to be fought, is there anybody out there that's willing to lead the charge? The answer to that question is yes. My next guest is Sharmi Golson. Sharmi is a national drug policy reform activist. She's the co-owner and former editor of the American Cultivator, a former staff writer for LEAP, which is Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, who has been on this program. and founder of the Michigan Moms United to End the War on Drugs. It's a statewide campaign to educate the media, that would be me, community and legislators about how the failed drug war intersects with and destroys families. That's right. You heard that correctly. Destroys family. Joining me now from Ann Arbor is Sharmi Golson. Sharmi, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Good morning, Tony. Thank you.
You know, let's just get one thing out of the way. I mean, you know, the war on drugs is an oxymoron. It's a bunch of BS. It never worked. It's never going to work. And we need to change our thinking on this, do we not?
That's correct. And, you know, I can fill in the blanks for some of those numbers that you were referencing earlier. We've been fighting this war for 40 years, at least 40 years, since Richard M. Nixon declared in 1971 in June that drugs were public enemy number one. We've spent $1 trillion, Tony.
Wow!
It's the longest-running civil war our country has ever seen, and none of the benchmarks have been met. If you look at the goals of the failed drug war, they want to decrease drug use, decrease the flow of drugs into society, and that's not happened. That has not happened. It's been an abject failure, and I just... You know, I want to appreciate the time on the radio today to be able to talk with you and educate you about
it.
You like getting educated?
Sharmi, this is going to be the first of many visits, so don't thank me so quickly. You may learn to regret this, but go ahead.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. We had massive drug policy reform across the nation this last week on the election. And as you know, both Washington State, Oregon, and Colorado had full legalization ballot initiatives on the docket. Two of those states passed those, California and Washington State. And here in Michigan, which is huge, it's really huge. You know, 4 years ago we had California, they had their attempt to legalize. It was barely defeated. And 4 years later, people are much more well-informed. And, you know, while it's true that folks are coming out of the closet with their marijuana use, it's also true that I think, you know, this coalition of people working to end the failed drug war is people who love marijuana, people who hate marijuana, and people who don't give a damn about marijuana. What we care about is the wasted resources. We care about mass incarceration. It's decimating communities of color. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm really concerned about how it's skewed police priorities and destroying families. It's absolutely skewed police priorities. You may have seen Flint police, what's that police chief's name? I've forgotten his name. But some of these cities have already come out in Michigan and said, hey, you guys passed this marijuana referendum. You don't want us to arrest, you know, adults with up to an ounce on private property. We're going to do it anyways. So let's talk about Flint, because the problem here isn't that this is still federal law. The problem is that police make an ungodly amount of money on drug enforcement. They get paid by the federal government. They get their burn JAG grants every year. They get gifted by the feds to go ahead and go get drugs. They don't get gifted with money or equipment to go get murderers, rapists, or robbers, drugs. So let's see, FANG, the multi-jurisdictional drug task force that operates out of Flint, for the 2013 budget, they received $408,500 from the feds to go get drugs. Our asset forfeiture laws allow law enforcement to take everything you own in Michigan. It's absolutely true. I've spent years convincing legislators of this. Unfortunately, Jeff Irwin has written and vetted through Legislative Services Bureau legislation that will be introduced in January, reforming the civil asset forfeiture laws in Michigan so that law enforcers and prosecutors have to obtain a conviction before they forfeit someone's property, because currently they don't need a conviction. They don't need to charge you with a crime. I've been interviewing raid victims for years, and, you know, in the fall especially when the hemp eradication guys are out, they land a helicopter in the yard, they take all your stuff. Oftentimes they don't have warrants. And, you know, these folks are left wondering if they're going to come back and re-victimize them, which is happening increasingly as well to medical marijuana patients and caregivers since we passed the law. So you've got this policing for profit going on. And in 2009, let's look at asset forfeiture earnings for Genesee County. Let's see, in 2009, they brought in $810,000, the local police did, and the sheriffs and prosecutors brought in $316,000 in asset forfeiture. So I believe it is disingenuous, at the very least, for the Flint police to come into the media and say, you know, we've got this federal law that we've got to adhere, when the fact of the matter is that not only are they raking in hand-over-fist money, stealing from people with no accountability, but here's the really critical part, Tony. The murder, rape, and felonious assault rates from Genesee County are inexcusable. From 2011, these are Michigan State Police statistics. From 2011 in Genesee County, we had a 10% arrest rate per incident for murder, a 10% arrest rate for incident for assault, and a 2% arrest rate per reported incident for rape. So as a woman, as a parent, this is just unacceptable any longer. So it's not just about, hey, marijuana is safer than alcohol. Everybody smokes it or uses it. Most people do. So let's just get real about it. This is a real public health and safety issue.
Well, and it's also a very real issue, Charmy, of democracy. Let's hop in our car at 75. We're in Flint, and let's travel an hour and a half south to the city of Detroit, where they also passed overwhelmingly the same ordinance that says that if you are 21 and over and you have an ounce or under of marijuana for personal use, that will no longer be illegal in the city of Detroit. The president of the Detroit City Council says that was a waste of our time. We won't honor it. And God forbid, Charmy, God forbid they take those resources and put it towards stopping violent crime instead of busting some dude that's smoking a doobie on his porch. What the hell? Where are our priorities?
You're yelling. It's awesome.
I'm sorry. I'm not yelling at you. You know that. Okay.
Yeah, it's great. It really is. You know, I've got the I'm kind of obsessed with this stuff. For Michigan Moms United, we've got a campaign right now to reform the civil asset forfeiture laws and create some drug task force accountability. These are the guys that they're so highly militarized, Tony. I'm sure folks, anybody that's my age, maybe your age, anybody that's over the age of, I'm going to be careful now. But, I mean, my father was a Washtenaw County deputy sheriff, and, you know, when he was a cop, he had a badge, he had a side firearm. He told me that when they caught kids smoking pot or drinking, they put them in the car, drove them home, knocked on the door, handed the keys to the parents and say, we caught your kids smoking pot. You can go pick your car up. It's down by the river. To me, that's sanity. That's allowing parents to parent according to their values, not the values of the punitive failed drug war. Because parents, I talk to parents all day long, these municipalities are extracting thousands of dollars from cash-strapped families and circulating their kids in and out of the criminal justice system, and adults as well. It leaves you with a record or an arrest record, which are barriers to education, employment, and housing. So, you know, nowadays, though, we've got, see, prior to Nixon declaring the drug war, raids like what we're seeing were unheard of. I mean, these are soldiers. This is a real war. It's not a cute little term that came up. It's a real war with real funding and real soldiers and real enemies. And it's incredibly lucrative. So in the 80s, I think it was about the 80s, the drug war progressed under the Military Cooperation with Law Enforcement Officials Act. And so Congress directed the military to make equipment and facilities and training available to civilian police. That's why, like, Oakland County has this tank, the Colonel, that they love so much. So now, you know, we've got the military that's drawn further into these efforts, and state and local police departments increasingly accepted the military as a model for their behavior and outlook. Well, the problem is that the mindset of a soldier is simply not appropriate for a civilian police officer, because police officers don't confront an enemy, but individual citizens who are protected by the Bill of Rights. And you can see this across the country with police brutality. It breaks my heart. One of the reasons I do this work is so we can restore right relations between law enforcement and communities. As long as we're fighting this drug war, I don't think that's possible.
Oh, you're right. Charmy, stay where you're at. We need to take a quick break here. Charmy Golson is my guest. By the way, if you go onto Facebook and search Michigan Moms United, Michigan Moms United, you'll see their Facebook page. Like it, get involved, join the discussion. But we do need to take a quick break here. Hi, Tony Trupiano here. One of my pet projects for 2012 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. You are connected to the internet. I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org. That's www.thetonyshow.org and click on the register to vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's free as well. So if you have to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says register to vote right here. We all care about our democracy, but if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are, without voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we have all had enough of that. Again, go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the register to vote button now and register.
Unions work. One of the many advantages of being a worker covered by a union contract is the increased likelihood that you will have guaranteed benefits, including scheduled wage increases, affordable health insurance, a secure pension, and paid time off than non-union workers. Wouldn't it be nice to have the peace of mind and economic security that comes with a union contract? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. I'm lucky to grow up where I could be whatever I want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 1310 WDTW, Detroit's Progressive Talk.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Merlin Olsen, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Oh, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
Well, Charmy Golson is my guest. She's with Michigan Moms United. We've got the link to their Facebook page up on our Facebook page. So if you just go there, you can click right over. Make sure you like it and join the conversation. You know, Charmy, you're right. This is very much not about is it okay to smoke pot and, you know, everybody's doing it, or there are lots of closet smokers. I mean, that's a totally separate conversation. And then we could have a conversation about medicinal marijuana. We could certainly talk about our neocon Attorney General, Bill Schuette, who thinks he's the moral conscience of an entire state when the guy lies on television over issues he has no business touching. We can go on and on and on. This isn't about that, though. This is about wasted tax dollars fighting a war that will never be won.
And it's about public health safety. It's you know, medical marijuana, we're in our infancy stages of drug policy reform here in Michigan. We just passed this law 4 years ago. It was a huge shock. I mean, the police are like, ah, they're running around with their heads on fire. Like, what do we do? Marijuana is evil. You take soldiers with guns into people's homes who have it. How on earth can these people think?
That's evil. That's...
So we're not going to do this. But when you look at it under the umbrella of the overall failed policy of the war on drugs, all this stuff gets a free ride. And to be really honest with you, our organization, I mean, we cover harm reduction. You know, we want to destigmatize drug use. Like I've got members of my family who off and on struggle with drug addiction, IV heroin abuse. And this is not a law enforcement issue. I don't need the police to police this health care issue. We need legitimate science to back up how we help addicts. Now, when we had alcohol prohibition, women like myself made alcohol illegal in the early 1900s. We said, this is nuts. Our men are drunk. They're crazy. Let's make this stuff illegal. And then after 10 years, what happened, Tony? We had rampant police corruption. The violence surrounding the now illegal and completely controlled by criminals, black market, you know, the black market manufactured, distributed, and sold alcohol. It took over the role of the government. And our kids were dying from bathtub gin. They were shooting each other. So women like me once again said, all right, this is a failed experiment. Let's end it. And so state by state, we ratified the whatever amendment. I'm sorry, I haven't had coffee yet this morning. We ratified the amendment that re-legalized alcohol and re-regulated it. And that's when AA was born after that, so that alcoholics weren't arrested, they weren't put in prison, they weren't shot by competitive, you know, manufacturers. They were able, when ready, to get help. And it's the same thing with drug use and addiction.
Absolutely. Charmaine, we've got callers. I want to get to them before we run out of time. 888-552-3595. Les in Detroit joins us now. Good morning, my brother. You're on the air with Charmaine Golson.
Well, good morning, fellow patriots. I called my son. He stays in Washington State. You know, they just legalized marijuana in the whole state of
Washington. I
thought it was more of a conservative state, but then my daughter-in-law told me that it is more a liberal state.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, we waste too much time and money throwing people in jail for drugs when, in fact, prescription drugs is still the number one drug in America. Okay, so we got to start revamping the laws of the land and make it conducive for society. Because I believe that prisons are for violent criminals, not for drug users. We need rehab houses, and we can, if we legalize that, think about the tax money that can be used in the progress of our society.
Les, now you're making sense. Thank you for your call, Charmaine. Get a load of Les.
Well, you know, thank you for your call, Wes. And I've got two things to say. Prescription drug deaths have surpassed car accidents by accidental deaths in this country, and it's been that way for years. And also, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a conservative or liberal state. I work with Obama Republicans. I work with Tea Party folks. I work with liberals. This is the true nonpartisan issue. We work across the board with everyone. It's been a real learning curve for me, too. I've learned to keep my mouth shut, keep my political views to myself, because the single most important thing to me is that we end this war.
Absolutely. Let's go back to the phone and welcome Mark in Birmingham. Mark, thanks for calling in this morning. You're on the air with Charmaine Golson.
Yeah, I appreciate this segment, but, you know, you've got to realize that when your guest is not on the air, you know, the advocates for more and more government to take away our individual responsibility is rampant, especially, you know, when it's pro-union on a Democratic side, whether it's health care, the war on business. The Republicans do their own invasion of our individual liberty. But, you know, this view that somehow President Obama is going to give us individual responsibility, we're opening ourselves up to a cradle-to-grave socialist state. Where
Mark, what does that have to do with this topic?
Because in the idea of us taking responsibility, being able to put what we want in our bodies, whether it's good for you or bad for you, that is individual responsibility. That is taking away from the government and giving it to individuals. The left of this country wants the government to regulate, to take care of us.
Well,
so they're not
going
to allow us to make our own mistakes.
Well, and I appreciate that, Mark.
Issues.
Mark, I appreciate that. We're just going to have to agree to disagree on that. And I appreciate you giving us a call this morning. But, you know, I am not looking for the government to give me everything. I'm not, you know, I'm not one of those people that you characterize those lefties that, you know, want to be part of the victim state. And this issue has nothing to do with what you called on. But, Charmy, I'll say this, and Mark makes a good point. It's time that we give the decision of what we want to do to our bodies back to the people that actually possess those bodies.
That's true. It's true. And, you know, he does raise a good point. There's nonstop conversation among reformers about how exactly to end this war. I mean, there's no wall of China that's going to come down for the drug war. It has permeated every aspect of the criminal justice system in ways that I still don't understand, and this is all I think about from day to night. So the question is, what do we do then? Do we give the job of regulating this now banned substance over to the imperfect government? And I got to tell you, since this is such a strong law enforcement issue, and you can call up, I strongly encourage you, Tony, to call up law enforcement against prohibition and talk to those folks, as well as Americans for Forfeiture Reform. And I can give you that information at the end of the end of the interview.
Yeah,
but
we've had Leap on the show.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Really great. Yeah. So, you know, we've got to, in order to transition the police, you know, we've got to think about the police. And I was the media director for the Committee for a Safer Michigan from January to July of this year, where we worked to put a constitutional repeal of all instances of marijuana prohibition before the voters. And we fell short of that goal of gathering enough signatures, but we're coming back, trust me. People are not leaving our movement. They're only joining us. So during that time, though, we worked really hard to help people understand that we've got an addiction to the revenue for policing for profit here, and we've got to help the police transition. When we announced that we were going to try to put this repeal on the ballot this last November, there was a Detroit police officer or a spokesperson that came and said, well, you know what, if that's what everybody wants, as long as it's something we can relate to, we'll have to follow the law.
Hey, Charmy, unfortunately, we're out of time.
Oh, all right.
To be continued. That was
Thank
a fast
Tony.
Half hour. Thank you. We'll be in touch. Charmy Golson, once again, Michigan Moms United on Facebook. Go to our Facebook page, click over. We got to get to the break.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
speed pouring, drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for,
and much more.
All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan. Please call 313-962-5020. Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan. Your future is waiting for you now.
The odds of this Alaskan-born pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling, Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council. Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Marilyn Olson, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity dog?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contest.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
Joining us now is Subodh Chandra. Subodh is an attorney with the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless, who is here to help us work through what happened and why it's important that we have this discussion. Subodh, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for shedding light on the issue for folks to know.
Well, you know, it's important as we see. I mean, we saw this, Subodh, certainly in many states. We saw it here in Michigan, obviously in Ohio. We saw it in Pennsylvania. We saw it in Indiana. And I could go on in Florida. You know, there's a real problem. And I got to tell you, I received a communication from a listener the day after the election that said, we should be embarrassed that we try to uphold ourselves as a beacon of light for the world, and this is the way we treat our voters. And I think that there's some legitimacy to that comment.
There is, and the court recognized that in its opinion. You know, to give you a little bit of background on this, because it's important for folks to understand how we got here, the lawsuit that we're talking about was actually first brought on behalf of the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless in 2006, and other groups as well, and individuals. That was in 2006, and it was originally a challenge to Ohio's voter ID statute, because what the fellow who's now the Secretary of State, John Husted, was then the Speaker of the House, and what they passed was a law that, you know, again, most folks superficially would say, well, okay, why shouldn't we have ID? And you can understand that concept, but the way they wrote the law is they wrote out the poorest of the poor. So if you have a paid form of identification, what we used to call in this country an illegal poll tax, like a state-paid driver's license means you got to have a car, a bank statement in your name means you got to have money, a utility statement in your name means you got to have property. If you had one of those things, you could vote on Election Day. But if you had the one thing that poor people have, which is their Social Security number to prove identity, you couldn't vote on Election Day. It was written out of the statute. So we had a federal consent decree as a result of that case that ordered that poor people would be able to vote provisionally on Election Day and their votes would be counted using the Social Security number. And, of course, the state could then verify their identities by checking those Social Security numbers. That's what the court order was, and that's what Judge Marbley said was violated with Husted's 11th hour decree on the Friday night before the election. He turned the rules around and said that votes would be discarded where the form, the section of the form he'd created for recording what the ID was somehow incomplete or missing. When state law provides, it's the poll worker's job to do it. So imagine what's really going on here. You have a so-called conservative taking the position that when a government bureaucrat screws up and doesn't do their job, your individual liberty should be sacrificed.
You know,
doesn't make any sense at all.
It makes no sense at all. And, you know, it kind of goes back to an issue we had here in Michigan. And of course, I did some research on this. Other states have these problems as well. We're having poll workers that are not properly trained. And instead of the secretaries of state taking responsibility for the lack of training or improper training, this tries to put the burden on the voter themselves. And sweet God, Sabode, I mean, how can we ever think that the voter will know right from wrong on these issues when the poll workers don't know what they're doing?
That's right. And some of the evidence that we submitted to the court this last week, and think about this, the election was last Tuesday, and within a matter of days we were able to find evidence that Husted's directive didn't even work because sometimes the poll workers were having the voters fill out that portion of the form as he directed. Sometimes the poll workers were filling it out. Sometimes they were doing a combination where the poll worker would fill out a portion, the voter would fill out a portion. And so you had a kind of chaos going, and clearly some of the poll workers were saying in their sworn testimony that, hey, we didn't know what the rules were. We were confused by the training. So what this is, and because let's take a step back. I mean, folks will listen to the details and say, why does this matter? What matters is that every single one of these tactics that the Secretary of State of Ohio was undertaking over the course of the last several months all had the effect. I can't speak to his intention, but they all had the effect of shaving off a little percentage here, a little percentage there of the voters that tend to be poor, which, as we know, statistically tend to vote for the party that he's not a part of.
Okay, fair enough, and I think that that's an accurate assessment. Let's go back to a moment to Judge Marbley's 17-page ruling. A 17-page, I want to kind of underline and boldface that because for those of us that read it, and we'll get it posted to our Facebook page, and I really do want to encourage people to read it. This judge basically was sending not just a message to Ohio, not just a message to Don Husted, but sending a message to the country that we cannot disenfranchise voters. There are laws that protect these things, and we should honor them.
Absolutely. That was what he was saying. And, you know, Judge Marbley in this case has made it clear at every stage for the last 6 years that he's going to be protective of the right to franchise. He understands the state's interest in trying to protect against potentially fraudulent voting, although there's no record in the there's no evidence in the record whatsoever that that's occurring or has occurred. He understands the state's interest in that, but at the same time, you can't peel off and disenfranchise segments of the electorate.
Well, again, it's one of those. It's certainly, in fact, I found that decision to be so well written and such common sense. I literally printed a copy and filed it so that I could pull it out from time to time to remind myself how important it is that we continue to fight this good fight. And Sabode Chandra, I would think especially, and I'll ask you to tell us a little bit about the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless, but I would think that advocating on behalf of a community that all some of them have is that right to vote. And I mean, that's all some of them have. We need to protect that at all cost.
Well, it was very moving in 2006, and I think one of the reasons we had this consent decree, one of the reasons that the court issued the order, and at that time, then Republican Secretary of State Ken Blackwell and Republican Attorney General Jim Petro entered into it, was because they were going to lose. We had a parade of witnesses in the courtroom ready to testify that they had been able to vote their whole lives, but as a result of that voter ID statute, they suddenly found themselves disenfranchised. And so the order ensured that they would be able to vote and their votes would be counted. You know, you spoke of Judge Marbley's opinion. I'm looking at it right now myself, and there's some extraordinary language in here that I have, you know, rarely seen in a judicial opinion. I mean, the court really calls out the Secretary of State for what's really going on here. He says, quote, "The surreptitious manner in which the Secretary went about implementing this last-minute change to the election rule casts serious doubts on his protestations of good faith." I mean, the court is very pointedly saying, you know, don't sit here and, you know, don't, as the old expression goes, piss on my leg and tell me it's raining. I mean, that is an extraordinary statement by the court, really effectively questioning the intentions of the Secretary of State.
Well, you know, and I'm glad that that happened, but I'm going to tell you why. Whether the Secretary of State were a Republican or a Democrat, here's one thing that office should be. It should be above reproach. It's that office should be about protecting the integrity of every person's right to vote. And when they breach that, as John Houston clearly did, then they need to be called out for it, because this office should be nonpartisan, and not unlike Michigan, clearly it's not. And that's what the judge was saying, in my opinion.
That's right. And one of the things that your listeners should understand is this particular opinion about this particular scheme, which was disenfranchising voters where there might be a technical defect on the form that they fill out on Election Day, is just one of many, many things that the Secretary of State did in connection with the 2012 election that had a suppressive effect. I mean, I'll give you a few examples, and it's just a few of them, that are going to sound absurd to your listeners, but this is what we experienced in Ohio. You all in Michigan probably have early voting.
No, we don't.
You don't? Okay. Well, in Ohio, we do, and we did. And in 2008, it came in increasing demand because of the long lines. People really wanted to vote early and lock their votes in. And so the weekend before the election, thousands of people, particularly in the urban counties where the lines can get long, took advantage of early voting in 2008. What the secretary then did was try to curtail that and end it on the weekend before the election. He was taken to federal court by the Obama campaign. It was ordered that the early voting had to continue and had to proceed. And then, initially, he defied the federal order and said, well, I'm not going to implement that now. I'm going to wait for the appeals. And then the judge said, I want you to in my courtroom next week. And then he caved. But he curtailed the number of hours. So the number of overall early voting hours was much smaller. As a result, fewer people early voted because working folks got to work outside of regular business hours.
Absolutely. Sabo, let me ask you to stay with us. We've got to get to a break, but we'll be right back. Hi, Tony Truffiano here. One of my pet projects for 2012 is to get those of you who have yet to register to vote to do just that. If you are connected to the internet, I have made it very easy for you to register. Just go to www.thetonyshow.org. That's www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button that is prominently displayed on the homepage. Now, there are no excuses, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's free as well. So if you have to register to vote, I am not concerned as to why, but I am concerned if you don't do it now. Again, just go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the button that says Register to Vote right here. We all care about our democracy, but if you are not registered to vote, then no matter how passionate you are, without voting or having the ability to vote, it's honestly just complaining, and we have all had enough of that. Again, go to www.thetonyshow.org and click on the Register to Vote button now and register.
Are drugs affecting your family or a friend? Call Narcanon, 1-800-468-6933. Narcanon provides free assessment and referral services. Call Narcanon at 1-800-468-6933 or visit our website at stopaddiction.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hiller's, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs, which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
Is America truly the land of the free, when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
First Shift with Tony Triano.
Attorney Jana Nessel.
I had an acting neighbor of mine. He could watch my kid, and this woman is she's a card-carrying member of the Republican Party, and she knew I was working on this case. And when I came to pick my kids up, she said, you know what, yes, you know, we are fiscal conservative, but our family still believes in equal rights for everyone. And it really touched me, because I thought there's a lot of people out there that they may not be Democrats, they may not be liberals, they don't believe in this kind of discrimination. They still think this is wrong.
Yeah, you know, Dana, so it continues to confound me. If there's one topic that should be nonpartisan, it should be human rights. It just should be.
On 1310 WDTW.
Follow 1310 WDTW on Facebook and Twitter. Find direct links on our homepage at 1310WDTW.com.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Trupiano, or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310WDTW.com today.
My guest once again is Subodh Chandra. He is an attorney with the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless. And before we go any further, Subodh, could you tell us a little bit about the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless?
Sure. The Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless is an organization based in Cleveland that is a member organization, essentially, of people who are homeless and are poor, and it provides services to them, provides counseling, assists them in finding shelter, assists them with issues like this, voting rights issues or other issues in which people's civil rights are being violated. And it's really been at the vanguard, as I said, since 2006 of taking on these issues of voter suppression. And I really give a lot of credit to a shoestring budget organization with community organizers who really try to take care of the poorest of the poor in our community.
No, it's wonderful. It sounds very much like the function of our local Sugar Law Center. And it's just good to know that organizations like the Northeast Ohio Coalition for the Homeless exist and certainly are advocates for all of us. You know, I preach often, Subodh, on this show that the one thing that we all have in common, whether you're one of the Koch brothers or whether you can't afford to buy a Coke, is we all have a right or should have a right to vote and make sure our vote counts. And that's really, honestly, at the end of the day, the foundation of this story, that's what this is about.
Well, we hold ourselves out to the world as Americans as having a model democracy, as being a place where every voice is heard, and having a representative government. And so what I find shocking, and I shouldn't be shocked anymore because I've now seen many years of these kinds of schemes, but it continues to shock me that there are people who simply want to change the rules of the game and don't don't want every voice to be heard and don't want every vote to count and are willing to do whatever it takes or is necessary to try to suppress that vote. I'd be ashamed of myself if I lived in the greatest democracy in the world and I kept trying to make it not a democracy, and yet there are people willing to do that.
Well, I said this story before the break. The story is not being done being told, and unfortunately that's true. Your Secretary of State, John Husted, has decided to appeal the judge's ruling, which, by the way, was pretty black and white.
He did, and you know, perhaps he's taking some comfort in that with a three-judge panel in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is removed from the situation, and with the mix of, you know, ideology of the various judges there, that perhaps he has a shot at overturning this. But Judge Marbley was very clear in his order, and we put this into our brief that we filed in the middle of the night. He was pretty clear that it was his own consent decree that he was interpreting. It was, and that the law clearly provides that a judge has the discretion to interpret their own order. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. I will never predict the future on these kinds of court rulings. Things bounce around. But Secretary Husted has a record now of losing these issues. Before the break, I was telling you about some of the other things he'd done. I'll give you one other example that's just extraordinary. Every single one of your listeners is going to understand it. Imagine you go in an urban area or a suburban area to a polling location where there are multiple precincts, and you walk up to the table, and your poll worker directs you to the wrong table, to the wrong precinct. This happened to thousands of voters in 2008. It happens all the time in these busy areas. So you get directed to the wrong table. They say you're not on the list, and then they have you vote provisionally. Secretary Husted's position to the courts was that you should be disenfranchised, even though it was the government worker that was responsible for the error. And the Sixth Circuit and Judge Marbley just shut him down on that and said, no, that doesn't make any sense at all to hold the voter accountable for poll worker error. But this is the kind of thing we're talking about.
Well, not to mention the fact that when he goes to appeal, when Secretary Husted goes to appeal this, it's paid for with taxpayer dollars.
It is. And one of the people who should not escape accountability in this, because this discussion has been focused on Secretary Husted, it is the Republican Attorney General of Ohio, Mike DeWine, the former U.S. Senator, who has been working in lockstep with the Secretary of State on this. It's not just the Secretary of State who is defending this case. It is the state of Ohio. And the state of Ohio has been taking the same position in court. And you're absolutely right. Taxpayer resources are being spent in defense of these kinds of unconstitutional acts.
Well, unfortunately, Spode, we have way too much in common. Our Attorney General, also a former member of Congress, not the Senate, working in cahoots with our Secretary of State, who they both happen to be Republican. In fact, yesterday she released a statement that she would not support early voting, but would support no excuse absentee voting as a substitute. And you and I both know it's not a substitute at all.
Well, that's right. And you know, one of the more interesting things about this that I'm sure your listeners will appreciate is, at the end of the day, I think a lot of these efforts backfired. I mean, to the extent that any of these efforts were an effort to try to tilt the playing field by a percentage point or two or more in favor of one political party, the effect that it had in Northeast Ohio, the effect that it had across Ohio, I think as people started hearing about these things, it underscored their determination to vote. And people stood in line for hours, and people made sure that they were voting and fought to have their vote count. What we're fighting over now is the counting of provisional ballots to make sure that votes count. It may not affect the outcome of a presidential election. It may affect the outcome of only, you know, some other races at the state rep level that we have that are very close, or some of the judicial races. It may affect no races at all. But as you keep pointing out, the dignity of every single one of those votes counts and matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I could probably easily spend another hour going through Judge Marbley's decision. You know, one of the things that I picked up on was, and it was actually in one of the articles that I read, it says, Marbley said that the form illegally shifted the responsibility for recording identification information from the provisional ballot application from the poll worker to the voter, which we, of course, talked about. He went on to say throughout the ruling, that he criticized the provisional ballot application that Secretary Husted designed for the presidential election, saying, and he questioned whether the poor drafting was, quote, by design or accident. Well, there's an accusation for you, Sabode.
Well, it was an extraordinary statement, along with the observation about the surreptitious manner in which this was done on the Friday night before the election, with the secretary always protesting, oh, you can't have last-minute election changes whenever he's opposing our efforts. So these are some extraordinary observations by the court, really calling out the secretary. And what we hope is that the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals will pay due deference to the judge here, the federal district judge. Sometimes in these kinds of politically charged cases, there's the old adage that lawyers have that bad facts make bad law. We are resting on basic, well-established legal principles: due process, equal protection of the law, a federal judge's right to interpret his own consent decree. That consent decree entered into by the parties. I mean, Husted tried to get out of this consent decree earlier this year altogether, eliminating the protections of the consent decree, and he was shut down in that as well. So we hope that the Court of Appeals will adhere to well-established legal principles and not undermine the efforts of the district.
Well, we are just out of time, but I got to tell you, we're going to continue to follow this. Don't be surprised if we don't reach back to you and have this discussion again. I can't thank you enough for your time this morning.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Sabode Chandra. Let's take a quick break here.
First Shift with Tony Trippiano.
I believe we can keep the promise of our founding. The idea that if you're willing to work hard, it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from or what you look like or where you love. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white or Hispanic or Asian or Native American or young or old or rich or poor, able, disabled, gay or straight. You can make it here in America if you're willing to try.
On 1310 WDTW.
You're listening to 1310 WDTW, Detroit's progressive talk.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us, like us, love us. At Tony Trupiano on Twitter and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today.
Tweet.
First Shift is more than a radio show.
It's a movement.
And it's Facebook fun as well.
Very impressive.
Add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today and tell a friend.
I'm friends with Marilyn Olson, too. He comes over.
Interact with other listeners.
Yo, what's up, diggity doll?
Listen to the song of the day.
Great googly moogly.
Vote in the daily poll.
That's how I roll.
And even win prizes by participating in the contests.
You ever have that feeling you were just born for greatness?
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310.